G'day folks, and welcome to the Vookcast, Australia's Nintendo podcast. This is Future Editing Ollie here, just letting you know that this episode is a little different from previous ones. Over the space of July, we recorded two episodes, and due to a number of personal and technical issues, I just haven't had the time to edit them and get them up until now. Because of that, I've decided to edit them together into one big, movie-length double episode, complete with two news segments, the notable releases for July, the games we've been playing, a featured topic, and two rounds of Nintendo 20 questions. One of these episodes features myself, Angelo, Michael, and Luke, while the other only has me, Michael, and Luke, so if you notice Angelo popping in and out a little bit, that's why. Starting with the next episode, we should be back to our regular schedule of fortnightly releases. Enjoy the episode. So Nintendo held a Nintendo Direct Mini Partner Showcase late last month, which is the first one since like 2020, when they just did a whole bunch of partner showcases there. It was packed with a bunch of super high-profile and highly requested games, as well as a few new surprises. So let's go down the list and talk about them. Also, can I just like point out that like calling it a Nintendo Direct Mini and being at 25 minutes long with like shit tons of like high-profile games is just like the weirdest thing. I know it's like in relation to like it being just a dropped video rather than a stream, but it's still very dumb. So I'll save the biggest ones sort of for last. So let's go down the list. So Square Enix is developing an all-new farming game called Harvestella. The game features farming, obviously. It's a farming game. Mixed in with some really slick-looking action JRPG gameplay. It looks kind of a bit like Crisis Core-ish. So it's a little bit like a big fancy 3D Stardew Valley where you go and spend some time farming some stuff. You spend some time going out and killing monsters and improving your village. And then apparently there's the Season of Death that you have to stop. So it takes a late turn into JRPG nonsense. But it looks pretty good. And it's coming November 4. Are people interested in this?
I am, because I do like a good farming game. But why they didn't call it Farming Fantasy? I mean, Square Enix are known for naming things horribly, but that was like the easiest name they could have gone with.
Yeah, I mean, Harvestella sounds like a farming themed stripper. Like, it's just, it's a weird name to choose. But I mean, the gameplay I thought looked pretty good. I was pretty happy overall with how it looked. It does look like the kind of game that's definitely going to have some performance issues on Switch, but I don't know if it's been announced for anything else.
Switch and PC, that's the only platform this game's coming to.
So, I don't know. It looks like it's going to be one of those games that has like some serious drops in combat and stuff like that. But whatever, it looks good. Hopefully they can deliver on it. Michael, you a fan of farming games?
I am, but I don't really care about this like in the slightest. Like, I look at this and I was like, I just don't care. Like, it looks a little jank as well to me. I know it's probably just because it's early gameplay footage, but there was like a couple of scenes where like one of the characters is like harvesting wheat, and it's literally like the most robotic animation of like two hands going together, and then the wheat just disappears in front of them. I'm like, okay, this is what we're going for. That's fun.
So they're going the Pokemon route of animations where they just don't bother animating. Angelo, what about you?
I'm just watching the trailer right now because just straight up, like, I haven't been paying too much attention to games news lately just because I've been off doing other things, which is why I haven't been on the show. But yeah, I'm just watching the trailer now and it's just absolute nonsense. Like just any sort of typical anime game, I guess. Like some of them actually resonate with really, really well, but this one I'm just like, I don't know what's going on.
It was so weird because like, I was watching it, right, and I was like, oh, yeah, this seems like a pretty fun, like, cute little farming game. And then it's like, oh, yeah, watch out for, you know, the Season of Death. And I was like, really? Like, why?
It's going full JRPG where, like, you know, there seems to be some huge world-ending event with, like, these giant monsters and stuff. But then in your off time, you're just out, like, you know, I don't know, pulling up some beetroot or something. So I don't understand.
What market are they going for? Like, I feel like people who play, like, farming games, like, I'm going to want to play this because it's got the JRPG action side of stuff. And the people who play the JRPG action side of stuff aren't going to want to play this because it's got all the farming stuff. Like, I don't know who they made this game for. There's a small Venn diagram with a very sliver of cutoff for those two genres.
This is probably a bit more realistic than, say, Rune Factory 5, which definitely does a lot more of the sort of farming and combat style than, say, something like Story of Seasons. But you are right. Like, it's the people who want a realistic farming game and a realistic sort of RPG game, there's definitely not a big crossover of those. It can't be. Otherwise, we'd have had 100 of these things by now.
I don't think this is being realistic in any sense of either of those sort of
Well, no, but you mean like, but, you know, it's a deep farming sim or a deep RPG. It can really be one or the other, whereas this is trying to be both and it makes no sense.
Yeah, well, what I was getting at was it's just leaning harder to like the bonkers aspects of both, I guess. But like, I guess like also cosplayers need something new to dress as each con season. So like, there's this now. They can go as a Harvestella character.
Yeah. I mean, like the only thing that like sort of like reminds me of it is that Sakuna Rice and Ruin, which is like half farming sim, half like 2D platformer Metroidvania kind of thing. But even then, like that didn't sell like super well because, like, again, what's the market there? Like, it doesn't appeal to fans of either genre, so it's just, I don't know, it's a weird choice.
If your farming thing was something you told someone to do it and they did it while you were off saving the world, then sure, you know, you come back and you get all the rewards but none of the effort. That's great. Or vice versa, you send people out to get you materials to help your farm grow. That's fine because, you know, you could take it or leave it, but. Yeah, games where they do this whole split, you've got to focus on two different aspects the whole time, they never work out well. They've never done it in the past, and I don't think this is the game to change it.
And also, yeah, just like the like cognitive dissonance there between like world-ending threat and picking some wheat. Like, if there's a world-ending threat, you should be doing something a little more important than picking wheat. Especially if you're like capable of fighting and you know, doing crazy summons and shit. Obviously, so like, I don't know. It's going to be a weird game, but I like weird games, so we'll see how it goes.
Watch as it sells 4 trillion copies when it releases.
I was going to say, like, this is one of those games that's going to be one of those surprise hits that people are going to dive super deep into, I'm sure.
So more Square Enix stuff. I think this is the only other Square Enix thing. Oh no, there's another one later. I don't know. Square Enix is all over the place these days. Dragon Quest Treasures was announced. Well, it wasn't announced. It got a release date. It was announced previously, and that was sort of a re-announcement of a game that was announced back in 2019 as well. So this is the third announcement of this game. It's called Dragon Quest Treasures. It's a Dragon Quest XI spin-off featuring Eric and his sister Mia, who were thieves / cool party members in Dragon Quest XI. The gameplay seems to be based on the Dragon Quest Monsters series, which sort of like makes sense because it started its life as a Dragon Quest Monsters game before spinning off into its big treasure focus, and has you recruiting monsters to help you fight and traverse the world so you can like summon up a slime and then bounce on it to get higher. It seems pretty cool from the gameplay, although I'm not like super sold on the art style, which is sort of like this weird like cel-shaded sort of chibi style.
Kind of reminds me of the 3DS Dragon Quest game.
I was going to say, it looks like a 3DS game.
I just love cel shading. So, like, any game that uses cel shading, I'm just like, yes, bring it back.
So it's currently unknown if this is a prequel or a sequel or just something different altogether. All we know is that it's kind of a spin-off. But, like, judging by the appearance of the characters, I would say it's probably a prequel. But then, like, it doesn't really make sense with how Eric's story happens in Dragon Quest XI. So, I don't know. Who knows? We'll find out when it comes out. So it's coming on, December 9th. Yeah, go on.
I was just looking at a screenshot of the... I've just stopped the video at one point, like, towards the end, where, like, from their airship or whatever, flying towards some sort of, like, floating island. And the island is in the shape of a giant dragon. Like, part of it looks like a giant dragon skull. Like, is this like, just a dead dragon, kind of like Guardians of the Galaxy, everyone lives inside, like, a celestial's head, or is this a floating island that just looks like a dragon?
Well, I mean, like, the land is called Draconia, so it's probably just, like, a dead dragon. I don't know. Dang. It's Dragon Quest. Stuff's weird. I have played Dragon Quest XI. It's probably one of my favorite JRPGs. By far the best game in the Dragon Quest series. And, I don't know, Eric was a very cool character in that, and they sort of kind of explore his relationship with his sister Mia, but not really all that much, so... yeah, this could be interesting. Eric is kind of cool. Michael, you've played Dragon Quest XI, haven't you?
Nope.
I wasn't sure if you... Because I remember us talking about it. I think you watched somebody play it.
Yes, I watched someone play it on Twitch, and I downloaded it on Game Pass on my Xbox. And then I started playing it, and I was like, this is too much for me right now. Like, I couldn't get into, like, a 74,000-year RPG. It definitely intrigues me, like, don't be wrong. Like, it's... definitely one of the JRPGs of late that actually tickles my fancy. But I just never had time to play it. Because I know I'll get into it, and then it'll be like 148 hours later, and I don't need it in my life right now.
Yeah, well, see, so I'm worse than you. I've started playing it. I'm probably like a third or halfway through the game or whatever. But the problem with playing it on Xbox is that when you put the console into like sleep mode or whatever, it's one of those games where the in-game timer keeps rolling. So my in-game timer is completely skewed. So I'm like, you know, probably 33-35% of the way through the main story or whatever. But somehow I've managed to clock up about 270 hours. So, I mean,
see, that's funny, because I was just about to say,
excuse. Like, the Xbox timer keeps on counting when it's sleeping.
It's so annoying. I hate when games do that.
So when I finished the game, I had 211 hours on the save file.
Yeah, okay. This is what I was scared of.
I also 100% of the game. So, like...
Oh, jeez.
You can probably get away with, like, 100 hours.
Maybe. I think Square Enix said it's, like, 70 to 80 hours if you just do the story.
Yeah.
That's still a lot. That's a lot of time.
And then, like, even then, like, it feels like the game's over because you get to the end and then the credits roll. But then, like, that's just, like, the first half of the game. And then the entire second half of the game is as long as the first half, and that's all after the credits. So... It's a long-ass game. It's like people were like freaking out because like when the demo for it on Switch came out, it was like a 10-hour demo, and it's like, wow, that's so much game. And I was like, yeah, but it's not, though.
It's like, that's the tutorial, people.
Yeah. But yeah, so, I don't know, Treasures looks good. It'll be interesting to see.
The dragon cat and the dragonfly / fairy pig look cool.
Yeah. I mean, like, the thing is, like, Dragon Quest has always kind of had, like, cutesy monsters. Like, they haven't really gone in the realistic direction, so they're all kind of, like, goofy and fun. So, like, being
able to... Can you imagine a realistic slime? Ugh.
I mean, if you've seen there's a movie, a Dragon Quest movie, that's based on Dragon Quest 4.
Yeah, that's right.
And it has, like, a kind of realistic-looking slime there. But, yeah.
Thanks.
I just realized, so that this makes, like the seventh spin-off Dragon Quest game on Switch. I don't think it's actually seven now, but... There's the Warriors games in Japan, there's this, there's the Builders series, the Mainline series, all the old games they re-released out of nowhere. There's a lot of Dragon Quest on Switch now.
There is. And there's been sort
there's of a like... a lot of Final Fantasy as well.
There is. We figured out that, like, you'll be able to play, like, soon you'll be able to play 1 through 10. Maybe you can... Oh, if the pixel remasters end up coming, you'll be able to play 1 through 10. And then 12 as well. That's just a lot. They should put 13 on there, though, because those are the best Final Fantasy games. So, another one that we sort of already knew about, but is out now, is the Portal Companion Collection. So, it was announced at the last Nintendo Direct, which was, like, February-ish?
Yeah, mid-February.
So, it features both Portal and Portal 2, and it has split-screen, local, and online multiplayer for Portal 2. I cannot imagine anybody having a fun time playing split-screen Portal 2. but it's there. It's an option. So apparently the port is pretty good. Vuk's been playing it. And yeah, it runs at a solid 60 frames a second, which is the only console version of the game to do that. It has like a whole bunch of like the Xbox 360 exclusive missions and shit like that. I don't know. But it's, yeah, sort of a little bit based on the 360 version, a little bit based on the mobile version. And yeah, it's very good. I'm sure everybody's... Yeah, go on.
Can I log into the game using my PS3 Steam account?
No, you can't. But it does show in one of the menus Xbox 360 achievements. Because they forgot to take those out.
That's great.
I laugh, though. I think it was like a day after this released, I saw reports of people that had put Half-Life 2 on the Switch.
All of Half-Life 2 is in the files, so they just had to edit it a little bit to get it working on there. So yeah, that's fun. I mean, like, it's pretty cheap. It's like, what, $37.50?
No, it's $27.99.
$27.99, there you go. But, I mean, I probably won't buy it. I've played both of these games to death on PC. I just don't have any need to play them again on Switch. But, you know, for people who have never really been into PC gaming... I mean, this is great.
I've played Portal 1 so many times, but I've only ever actually played Portal 2 once through to completion.
I think same. I think I was, yeah, I've only done that once too.
I still play Portal 2 co-op to this day with a mate. Yeah. It's fantastic.
I actually only played Portal 2 co-op for the first time late last year. I'd never done it before. But like, it's kind of annoying as a colorblind person because the portals are just not super colorblind friendly. But you can sort of, like, change that with mods on the Steam Workshop, obviously you can't do that on the Switch version, so unlikely I'm going to do that. But I haven't played
Portal 2. Get some cellophane and put it over your screen, man. You'll be fine.
But yeah, so I haven't played Portal 2 in a while, so like I might pick it up if it goes on sale. I mean, it's like Valve, so it'll probably go on sale very frequently. But yeah, so if anyone has any thoughts on that.
I'm still blown away, though, that NVIDIA were the company to do the work to bring this over to Switch.
Yeah. Well, because they did the mobile version for the NVIDIA Shield, right?
Oh, yeah, and I'm not saying that, but it's just like, if Valve had said, hey, we're bringing Portal to the Switch, you know, nobody in their right mind would have gone, oh, NVIDIA going to be doing that. Because, you know, you think of NVIDIA, you don't think of a game maker, you think of graphics cards and
it's like AI. someone taking Halo Wars over to Intel and be like, here you go.
Yeah.
All right, so moving on. The best Mega Man games are finally headed to Switch. So the Mega Man Battle Network Legacy Collection, good lord, was announced during this Nintendo Direct Mini. It features all 10 GBA games, so that's 1 through 6, and like the back half of them have two versions, because Pokemon was real hot at the time, and they decided every game should have two versions. So it has all sorts of features and additions, like art and filters and stuff, including a really bad pixel smearing filter.
I'm glad you brought it up. It looks awful. Like, it
is genuinely, like, the pixel smoothing filter that I've used is probably the worst filter for a retro video game that I've ever seen in my life.
I don't know why they chose to show that in the trailer. Like,
yeah, that I would pay more money if that wasn't in the game.
Well, at least it's optional. It's not forced on you.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's
small,
the thing,
small blessings.
But just why that choice? Like, it's just, it's weird.
I don't know. It's a dumb thing. So it'll be spread across two volumes, as with previous collections. So Mega Man X and Mega Man OG collections were both spread over two. I don't think the Zero was. Mega Man Zero collection, because that's just Zero, 1 through 5, and then ZX, both games. But yeah, this will be spread across two volumes, which makes sense. It's 10 games. And if it's anything like previous ones, the whole collection will be like $60, which for like 10 of the best games ever made, I have no issues paying $60 for those. So have people played the Battle Network games in the past?
Yeah.
I've played one and two.
These are the games that I used to like absolutely run my terrible 2002 PC into the ground with, trying to like emulate way back in the day. Yeah, the Battle Network games are so much fun. Just around that time, there were some really good Game Boy Advance games coming out, and this was definitely up there as one of the best.
Yeah, I think for me, the first Battle Network game was sort of like, obviously I'd played Pokemon on my GBA before, and like that was all well and good, but like this was the first game other than Pokemon that was like a full ass game. Like, it wasn't like just like some 8-hour experience. It wasn't like anything like that. This was like a full like 30-hour RPG that like just kept on getting better throughout the entire game. It was like a huge thing, and all of the games are like that. They're huge games with like fairly good stories, although the localization is a bit yikes.
Yeah,
but it does seem that they've sort of addressed some of that as well, because they've sort of changed the script in a couple things, so it'd be nice to see sort of how that goes.
What was interesting about this is that like you were sort of joking about it sort of having like a bit of a Pokemon sort of thing with it, because you know they started releasing two versions of single games and stuff. But it was also around the time where it took a lot of influence from things like Digimon, like the whole like entering a digital world. There was a whole new characterization of the characters. It basically recharacterized Mega Man in general. Like, you know, you've got heaps of the different robot masters from Mega Man now completely redone in a new style here, and adding human characters. And the anime was actually all right as well, from what I can remember.
Yeah, the anime was great.
That had over 200 episodes too, so it wasn't a one shot done thing. That anime.
Yeah, it was. It just completely reinvented Mega Man as a character and as a series. It was
200 episodes, cool. Like half a storyline in anime though. So,
I will say though, no Wonder Swan Mega Man Battle Network game release in this collection.
Yeah, which is disappointing, but also you're not really missing out on much.
No, definitely not.
I will say there was like there was a DS. Like Battle Star or Star, I don't know what it was called. It was like sort of like a continuation. It was set like a couple hundred years after, but sort of had the same style gameplay, but in like a first person perspective, which was kind of weird.
There's one viewpoint you never want on a DS. It's first person.
So I'm very excited about this. It's coming out in 2023, which is just way too far away. I kind of just want it now. I mean, it's just some GBA games in a a container. Just give it to me now.
Yeah, yeah, but it has that high resolution filter that you've always wanted.
What is funny though, that I think Digital Eclipse are doing this port as well, which they've done all the other collections for Capcom.
Yeah.
But they're also, I mean, they're doing the Atari one later this year, the 50th anniversary for Atari, and they're doing another one in before then. So those guys must be just absolutely pumped at the moment doing all these sort of collections.
Well, I think what'll be interesting is that, like, with the Zero collection, those aren't emulation. That's actual ports using the source code. So this, you know, this was sort of around the same era as the Zero. It was sort of the Capcom GBA era. So, you know, there's a pretty good likelihood that they'll have the source code for this as well and do, like, proper actual ports rather than just, like, emulation containers. So, I don't know. It could be a really nice experience. This is one that I know nothing about, but I know that Luke and Michael are going to go nuts for this. So, Return to Monkey Island will arrive first on Nintendo Switch and PC later this year. So the game is being developed by Ron Gilbert's Terrible Toy Box team in collaboration with Devolver Digital and Lucasfilm Games. It's a timed console exclusive for Switch, so it'll probably come to other consoles eventually. And it'll come out on the same day, which we don't know what it is yet. It's just sometime in 2022. So, yeah, go nuts for it. Do you think it's going to be good on Switch, or are you just going to play on PC? Because it seems PC would be like...
You know the answer to that for me. I'm going to play it on PC. But, like, I don't think it'll be bad on Switch. Like, it's got a very 2D art style. It's going to run great on Switch, I assume. And it's going to be a point and click. You know, it's going to be a little bit more difficult controlling, like, the mouse cursor with the controller, I guess. But it's not going to be horrible. Like, I feel
unless
like...
Unless it supports touchscreen.
It could also support touchscreen. But yeah, like if you don't have a PC or don't want to play on a PC, I don't think it's going to be a bad option at all. I think it'll be nice.
We've had plenty of Monkey Island games on console now.
Mm-hmm. So, at this point, though, I don't know if we'll find out at a release date until it just releases because of all the toxic bullshit that has been slung the studio and their way, which is just awful.
Yeah. Well, that was going to be my next question was how do you guys feel about the art style being two big Monkey Island boys?
Yeah, I like it. Like, you know, it's... People like losing their minds, like it's completely destroying the game in every capacity. Yes, it is like very, very stylized. And I'm not saying that people can't dislike what it looks like. You 100% can, but it doesn't give you the authority to just shit all over these people in every capacity. Like this is not G.
Yeah, I mean, I said it the other day. I don't like Guybrush's head in this new art style. I think his head's too long. It just doesn't look right to me. But that's just my personal thing. But the overall art style, it just reminds me of Guacamelee. And I love Guacamelee. The art style just works so well there, and this is very similar.
It's a very Cartoon Network, Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends kind of art style, I feel.
Yeah, well, the guy who's leading all this, Rex Crowell, I think his name is, you know, he did Tearaway for Media Molecule, which is that paper-based game. He was the art director for that, and then he went and did Knights and Bikes through Double Fine. And those games are all fantastic. So... Mm. I mean, I've said it before, but games, doesn't matter what a game looks like, it entirely depends on how it plays. You know, we all go nuts these days over, you know, 8-bit retro games because, you know, it reminds us of our youth. It's like, we don't go nuts because it's 8-bit art style. It's the gameplay that sells it. So, yeah. I'm all down for this one.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've never played any of the Monkey Island games, although I did redeem all of them when they were free. But
yeah, I've only just started playing the first one just a couple of days ago because it was on Amazon however many months or years ago, and just booting it up and I'm just giving it a crack. You know, it's a bit slow paced for me, but you know, I also just understand that it's a 30-year-old game at this point, so just having a nice casual smooth time with it. And you know, I got some chuckles playing it and stuff. So I'm hoping to be able to play through there's pretty much mainly three to get through, right? There's the Tails games as well, but like in terms of the mainline series, there's only three.
To play this one, you only really need to play the first two because this is really a direct sequel to the second one.
Right. So this one is basically like a spiritual successor in terms of being like a third game.
Yeah, pretty much. Like Ron Gilbert said that he's not ignoring any of the stuff that's happened in Monkey Island 3, 4, and 5. But this is definitely a direct successor number two. And it's treated as such.
Okay. All right, so I'll just play the first two and jump into this one, then I'll be ready for it and come back to the others.
Yeah, I mean, I'll probably do the same. Again, like, I haven't really played any of these games before, but, like, the art style is really interesting, and it seems like it's quite witty and funny.
I mean, so... the thing that I can say about the old games today is that in games that tried to be funny in the 80s and 90s and early noughts, though, that humor was very subjective to the time. So some of those jokes do not hold up today in today's climate of anything, whereas the Monkey Island games, the jokes still hold up.
Yep. I think I've read somewhere where people were comparing the remake, I guess they're called remake versions from like, what, 10 years ago or whatever, compared to the originals, that playing with voice acting, with those remake ones in particular, like kind of takes away some of the humor. Because according to this person that I was reading, they got a lot of retweets for it. Like just reading them in your head, the jokes seem to play out a lot better than actually listening to the voice acting. So I don't know if you guys have anything to add to that as well.
So I think like I actually like them with the voice acting. The issue with the voice acting versions is that the voice acting goes along with the text cadence on the screen. And because the game was made for you to read, the cadence of stuff is really, really off. Like they'll read a sentence and there'll be a pause as it skips over to the next line. Whereas if you play the games 3, 4, and 5, which had all the text recorded at the beginning, all the voice acting flows really, really well. Where the voice acting doesn't really flow well in the first and second games because it wasn't designed for that at all.
Kind of gives you the same effect as when you watch a movie and they have subtitles on and you can read the entire sentence long before the person's finished speaking.
I think it's worse than that though, because like at least again, like it's acted correctly on the screen. Where in this, it's not really like every single voice line was pretty much recorded separately with the text that comes up on the screen because that's how it plays.
You're saying kind of like the rhythmical, the comedic rhythm doesn't quite sync up. Like, you know, it's 100%. Just very
like when you play, you know exactly what I mean. They'll be like, they'll read something and that'll be a weird pause that wouldn't be there if someone was actually just talking normally.
Yep, I get what you mean.
Yeah, whereas like,
you fight there like are a lot of like,
there are a lot of like RPGs that like have, sort of like voiced text boxes, and most of them will have an option to like just auto advance through the text boxes so you don't have to press A at the end of each one. Most of them are quite bad though because it does like do that kind of pause at the end of it. I found a couple that are like pretty good about that, but like the big thing that like kind of is really frustrating is like when a character gets like cut off like mid-sentence, right? Usually with those like auto advancing text boxes kind of thing, it sounds really stilted because they'll just like stop their sentence. And then it'll be like a second later, somebody will interrupt. And it's just like, it's really awkward. So I imagine that's very similar to what you're describing here, where like it's just awkwardly paced because of how it's set up.
So if you own the OG versions and the special editions, there is a patch you can download that will patch in the audio into the original versions. So you can get the best of both worlds if you want to. You can play the OG graphics and also play with voices.
So yeah, that's coming out in 2022. I imagine we'll get a release date sometime in the next couple months because that's usually how Devolver does things, and I think they're the ones publishing it, so...
Yeah.
Which is hilarious because when Lucasfilm said, hey, we've got... We're Lucasfilm games are starting up, Devolver literally just tweeted out, we've got a suitcase of money for Monkey Island, and like 2 years go past, and then they announced a new Monkey Island game. So...
All right, so the next one is like getting into the last two now, and they're kind of like bigger games. Nier Automata is somehow coming to the Nintendo Switch in a new like Final Cut edition called The End of Yore. So the port is a collaboration between Platinum Games and Virtuos, and Virtuos is the company that ported Dark Souls, Starlink, BioShock, XCOM 2, Final Fantasy 10, and 12, and they also helped develop. The Astral Chain with Platinum Games. So they've worked together on the same engine even in the past. So it should be fairly solid, I think. They're reportedly aiming for 720p 30 frames a second in handheld and 1080p 30 frames a second when docked, which, you know, is obviously half the frame rate that it ran on other consoles. But
it having has more played content than the other consoles, so
it does. So it actually comes with new all of the previous DLC as well as new DLC just for the Switch version. Yeah. I mean, like, I think like the 30 frames a second was unfortunate for the kind of game it is, but like also it's not as fast paced as some of Platinum's other games, and like Astral Chain has shown that like if you know. If it's designed well enough, it can sort of withstand 30 frames a second, but this wasn't, so it'll be interesting to see if they make any tweaks to how the combat flows to accommodate for that.
I'm interested to see how long this actually stays a Switch exclusive. I feel like this is one of those things that's going to eventually just leak out on other platforms.
Oh yeah, probably. They're again, like, most of it is, like, already, like, it's just the new DLC that isn't on other consoles already. But, like, they're probably preparing, like, Xbox Series and PS5 versions that have that in it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I absolutely, I don't want to say I hate Nier, but it is extremely not for me. I've had so many people tell me, like, oh, you should play Nier, you would love it. And I was like, okay, I've tried playing it, like, 4 times now, and
Is that once for each version that's come out so far? Because there are so many versions of the same game.
I just remember the original PS3 box art for the original games, like just a side-on profile of some guy in like a metal helmet. It's like, yep. The box art didn't tell me anything about the game. When I read the back of it, I'm like, I don't know what this is supposed to be.
Yeah. I just find like a lot of people like have fallen in love with like the writing of Nier. But like, I think it's kind of one of those games where, like, it takes itself too seriously to do something silly, and it's too silly to take itself seriously, so it just kind of comes off as, like, a little bit pretentious. So, I don't know. I've just, like, sort of bounced off it so many times now that, like, I probably won't pick up this version, although I think it was, like, surprisingly cheap as well.
It's, like, $60, $55, $60 or something.
$55 or something, yeah. So, I mean, it's good that it's not, like, as expensive as all of the other versions, but yeah, I don't know. Has anyone played Nier? Is anyone interested in playing it on Switch?
I tried it on Game Pass. I got like, I don't know, 45 minutes in, and I'm just like, this isn't quite what I was expecting, and just fell off it real hard. I appreciate people out there who love it, but yeah, I just kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think like the combat isn't fun enough to put up with the writing. that's how I would say it.
I had someone else review the game, the remake of the first game for me, so.
Yeah,
that's how much I care about it.
But like, it, you know, the remake, the Nier Replicant, whatever they called it, is also like just in the exact same engine as Automata, and that would be the same engine that they used for Astral Chain, and the same engine that they're using for Bayonetta 3 now. So, you know, it's pretty likely that that'll come over as well, but maybe we'll have to wait another 5 years for that one.
I'll be honest, at this point, I don't know why Nintendo just don't buy Platinum.
I mean,
I know that's not related to the topic, but I don't know. It just seems like they should.
Yeah, it's weird because like Nintendo sort of like owns some like Platinum properties. So like Astral Chain is like entirely owned by Nintendo, and they sort of like have the monopoly on Bayonetta. But I don't know.
Yeah,
it's weird. Platinum is, like, super hit or miss. Like, some of their games are just, like, absolutely excellent, and then others are just, like, trashed here.
Look at you, Valleys. Legend of Korra.
Peaks and Valleys.
Yeah, I mean, the
quality.
The Legend of Korra was one of those games where it was, like, it had so much potential. And, like, the animations and, like, the combat system was nice. It's just, like, the actual game design was so clearly rushed that it was not worth playing. But,
yeah, for those who don't know, Platinum were hired by Activision to make some licensed games. They made a Transformers game, a Legend of Korra game, and a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game. And they made one game a year over 3 years.
Yeah. And the Transformers one wasn't that bad. I didn't hate the Transformers one. Although all three of those games are no longer available on anything anymore. So.
Yeah.
Yep.
But you're not really missing out on much because they are very, very weak entries in Platinum's release tapestry. So this is a big one. Everybody kind of knew it was coming, but Persona 5 Royal is coming to Switch. It was announced earlier in the month to be coming to Xbox, PS5, and PC. Yeah, go on.
Well, everyone was expecting Persona 5 to come out at some point over the last 5 years, and now it's happening.
I mean, because that's the thing. Like, and I wrote this very salty sentence in my reporting of the news, which the site isn't loading. Oh, there we go. So I said that, like, you know, it's been a long time coming for this game, despite its protagonist Joker being in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, Catherine Fullbody, his costume being in Tokyo Mirage Sessions, Morgana being in Super Monkey Ball Banana Mania, and the game's actual canon sequel being on the Switch already. Somehow Persona 5 hasn't gotten a port until now. And I don't know if that's just because, like, they were holding off to, like, put the Royal version on there or whatever. I don't know. It's dumb that it hasn't had a release before now. But
my favorite tweet that I saw about this was, I completely forget who said it, but it was just like, hey, it's the guy from Smash Brothers. Has his own game now.
But yeah, so it's finally coming to Switch. So it's coming on October 12th. And Persona 5 Royal, if you didn't know, is an enhanced version of Persona 5 running on the same engine as Catherine Full Body, which was a really solid port on Switch, even though the game itself is super trash. No, it's a good game. It just, like, it has, like, some horrid transphobia in it, and not about that. So, yeah, coming on October 12th, and then at some point in the future, they haven't really said
21st,
when...
Ollie. You've got it? Your notes around the wrong way.
All right, yeah. So October 21st, the 21st of October, is when it's coming, and then Persona 3 Portable and Persona 4 Golden remasters are also coming at some point in the future. They have not said when. It, you know, in the initial release, they just said, like, in the future, and then, like, in the Nintendo Direct, they said soon, and then on the website, they said briefly that it was 2023, and then they deleted that section and the tweet referring to it. So it's like, I don't know. At some point, Persona 3 Portable and Persona 4 Golden will come to the Switch.
At some point, Persona 3 Portable will be a portable game again.
So, Persona 3, is that the one where, like, all the teenagers shoot themselves in the head?
Yes, that's the one, yeah.
Hmm. Appropriate timing.
Persona 3 Portable, I don't know. Persona 3 Portable, like, it's a very strange instance where, like, it is both technically better and technically worse than other versions of the game. So, like, it has, like, a whole bunch of new stuff. Like, it has a new protagonist, it has, you know, new story content, new monsters and all of that stuff. But it also takes away sort of the anime cutscenes and sort of wandering around in general. So, I don't know, it's compromised, but we don't know what the remake's going to be, or remaster. But Persona 4 Golden, absolutely wonderful game. It has some overt homophobia in it, which is not great. Because Atlas apparently just has, like, huge problems with social issues. But, yeah, it's a really, really good game apart from that. And I'm glad it's coming to Switch and other things as well.
Has Persona 4 Golden Arena Ultimax, whatever the hell it's called, launched yet on Switch, or is it still coming?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that came out last year.
I just remember it was announced, and I'm like, oh, they're doing another spin-off for Persona 4 Switch. Like,
I mean, that was a remaster of an old fighting game anyway, with new content and stuff. But, I mean, that was like sort of like, I don't know. They added, like, in a post-launch update, they added rollback netcode to every console except Switch. So, don't know why they did that. But I don't know. I have issues with Persona 5 because it's such a long game, and so much of it in, like, the second half of that game just, like, drags on significantly. And then Royal adds, like, another 50 hours to that runtime. So I don't know. I will almost certainly be the one stuck reviewing it. So that'll be fun. Has anybody else actually played Persona 5? I don't know if I'm the only person who's done it.
Yeah, I haven't played a Persona or a Shin Megami Tensei game.
These are the only Shin Megami Tensei games that I've played, but I've played 5 all the way up to the last palace. It took me about a year, so I was basically playing it in real time, and just never finished the game. I just kind of got there, and I think I was just underleveled, and just kind of got stuck. And I'm like, oh, I'm so done. I'm so exhausted. I'm like 90 hours in. And then Persona 4 Golden I played on Vita years ago, and actually really enjoyed that one. I couldn't tell you a whole lot about the story, but I do remember enjoying that one quite a bit. It was really good fun. It looked pretty good on the Vita at the time. So,
yeah. I mean, like, I think it being on Switch is, like, great, because I feel like long RPGs are quite good on Switch, because you can just sort of, like, play them in bed before you go to sleep, and
yeah,
then, you know, you get through it.
Why Persona 4 and Persona 4 and Persona 3 aren't just, like, bundled together or something, kind of, I don't know,
yeah,
confuses,
like,
me.
And I'm worried about, like, the prices too, because I have a feeling, like, yeah, it's Atlas. They're going to, like, sell them for, like, $80 a piece.
Persona 5 Royal especially is going to be full price as possible.
That's yeah, right. They're all coming to Game Pass day one, so.
I mean, that's the other thing,
too, right? Yeah,
they are right. Going to be on Game Pass. Yeah.
And you could play the cloud versions on your mobile device, so those will all be portable.
Unless you're in WA, where Game Plus streaming is not great.
Oh, really? That sucks.
Yeah, they just don't have any local servers for Game Pass in WA, so it all has to go through the entire country's worth of networking.
On the flip side, though, NVIDIA GeForce is based in WA.
Yeah.
So it works over there, but doesn't work so well over here.
Nah, Pentanet have services in the eastern states as well. You use both, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I know it launched initially in WA. I still didn't know they had expanded it.
Yeah. I mean, I tried the beta preview of that because they reached out to me and they're like, hey, we think this is relevant to your interests as a Switch person. And I was like, okay, I'll try it out. And yeah, it seemed pretty solid. But yeah, so that's all the things. Overall, what do people think of the Nintendo Direct Mini Partner Showcase?
Pretty good. I'm actually hyped for a game they didn't even talk about, which is Blank, which I think looks amazing. Any type of like cutesy co-op game that's like a puzzle game, I'm like, well, count me in.
See, Blank gave me like huge like Journey vibes.
Big time.
And obviously, like, that's such a fantastic game that...
A lot like the Unfinished Swan as well. It's got that same style.
Yeah.
I mean, from the colors and the way the world is built in terms of its shapes, I got that Mad World from Platinum.
Also Mad World, yeah.
Mad World was great.
So there were a couple other things as well. Yeah, go on.
Did we know that Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope was coming on October 20th outside of this direct?
We knew it was 2022, but we didn't have a date.
Right. So yeah, I think that's probably a notable one to mention as well. Mm-hmm. I don't know if everyone else was into it.
No, it's a really, really excellent game. I can't wait.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So yeah, October 20th.
And the fact they hosted a showcase the day after and just like exploded with more information as well, including three composers.
Yeah.
So I actually think it's really interesting the way that they've changed up the gameplay here, rather than like having like set grids and like you have to move to specific places and stuff. You can just like wander around as much as you'd like, as long as you have like the movement, which I think is really going to change like sort of how it plays out. I think it's going to be a lot more dynamic than the first game, which I enjoyed the first game, but it wasn't like...
Well, the fact that battles now no longer take place within set zones.
Yeah.
You can just like trip an enemy and on the path that you're on, rather than having to go and walk between the two flags to say, I'm entering a combat zone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's also other things, like there was this game called RPG Time, which looked kind of interesting. They showed Sonic Frontiers stuff, but like, whatever.
Strangely enough, though, the Sonic Frontiers, that trailer is more helpful at explaining what's happening in the game than all the stuff that IGN got as part of their IGN first.
But the other one that like really interested me was Lorelei and the Laser Eyes, which is made by Sumogo, who are the people who did Sayonara Wild Hearts, which is my favorite Switch game and probably my favorite game of all time. It looks really bizarre and interesting. Very, very different from Sayonara Wild Hearts. So,
very PS1 looking too with some of its visuals.
Yeah.
Early PS1 3D stuff.
But like deliberately though.
Yeah, deliberately. And in a good way. So that's I think it was overall like a pretty good presentation. If they just like tossed in a couple of like first party stuff as well and made it a full direct, I think everybody would have been really happy with it. Overall, pretty good. So a little over a month after Mario Strikers Battle League Football's release, its first wave of free DLC is finally out. So the DLC includes Daisy and Shy Guy as playable characters, a new desert ruined stadium, and a new gear set based on Knights. So there will reportedly be two more updates coming by the end of the year. We don't really know if there's going to be more updates after the end of the year, but right now we just know that there's two more coming by the end of the year. So I kind of want to talk about just Nintendo sports games in general, because like I feel like there's a growing discontent with the state that they're launching in and the way that they're releasing content for them after. Because like Nintendo Switch Sports, that was announced just the other day, that it's getting, you know, its first big update, and it's like coming with like, you can do a single new move in volleyball and you can control soccer with your leg strap. And like that's the thing. Like they, you know, spent marketing money to show that that's what they were doing. You know, Mario Tennis Aces sort of had issues with the fact that it was just like drip feeding content incredibly slowly. There was probably another sports game in between there. Mario Golf, and that sort of had the same issue where like they were like, oh yeah, we're gonna have like a whole bunch of updates, and then it was like, you know, there was one course that was like a couple months after release. And then they just didn't really do anything more after that, apart from, like, a couple new characters. So, yeah, I don't know. Is Daisy enough to get anybody to continue playing this game? Do either of you even have the game?
Yeah, I have the game. I think, and I think we're just talking about the issues with sports games in general, or at least Nintendo sports games, where they pretty much exist for a week, maybe 2 weeks, of people playing them, and then they are dead as shit after that. Yeah. And it really sucks, because like, it's not these games are bad. Like, Tennis Aces was awesome, Golf is awesome, Strikers League football is awesome. Like, they're great games, just like, they don't have longevity in them, and it really sucks. Like, if you want to buy this game now and play some multiplayer, like, good luck. Like, especially in Australia. Like, yeah. Goddamn.
Yeah, we had people complaining in our Discord earlier today that, like, even, like, straight after the update, right, the day that the update came out that added all of these things, well, these three things, I should say, you know, even after that, the update's out, like, it was widely tweeted and shared by Nintendo accounts and stuff, and there was still just, like, nobody to play with. And I think that's, like, becoming a bit of a problem for these sports games for Nintendo, because, like, at what point does Nintendo even, like, bother trying to do post-launch updates, right? Like, if it were me and I was looking at it, right, it's like, there's, you know, anecdotally, there's no evidence that, like, doing these extra updates for the sports games brings players back at all. It's just, like, the people who are already playing are still playing it, and, you know, nobody's gonna, like, run out and buy Mario Strikers Battle League Football because, you know, Shy Guy got added. Yeah, it's just in a really weird space. Yeah,
I was gonna say, I think the problem that Nintendo have, and it's a silly problem, but it is only their problem, is that their sports games are anemic in terms of what they offer. So not in terms of, you know, features or anything, but, you know, you talk about like Mario Golf, there were what, half a dozen courses in that one when it launched, and, you know, they added some afterwards. Whereas you get PGA Tour from 2K and you get like 60 courses and then, you know, fan-made courses and all this sort of stuff. So the prices are the same, but there's just 1,000% more content in any other sports game that hits the Switch. Even FIFA 23 Legacy Edition coming in September, that'll have a lot more content than Mario Strikers Battle League Football will. And you're essentially just...
I mean, it'll be the same content as the past 4 years, but it'll have more content.
No, they've added new content this year. They've added new content. But you get my point, is that all these other sports games have, you know, all this content to enjoy, or you can get the Mario Sports version of it where you get like an eighth of the content for the same price, but you're playing with Mario characters. It just, there's no value return in that. And I think that's what people are getting. They're sort of seeing that and going, well, if I'm spending $80 on a game, should I get the one that has 6 courses for me to play on or 60 courses for me to play on?
Yeah. And it's like, obviously it's like a very different kind of game, right? It's like when you're going for like a much more realistic thing, having like tons and tons and tons of options is better. But like, you're right that like having 6 courses compared to 60, it just makes your game look bad. And it's one of those things where it's like, it's not as if Nintendo doesn't know how to do live service games, right? Like, Smash was constantly getting updates. Splatoon is like wildly successful with like how often they like update stuff, right? Like, but it's a matter of dedicating resources to that and having a solid base game, right? Because like Smash Ultimate had a really solid base game and Splatoon 2 had a really solid base game. There was a lot of stuff to do which kept players at it, you know, from day dot up until the time they were ready to get updates out. But then like the updates that they were bringing out, even if they weren't like substantial, you knew that there was going to be a regular cadence. Like with Splatoon, there was going to be a new weapon type and, you know, maybe some new outfits and stuff every single month, right? We knew from day dot, and, you know, they were adding new stages to that pretty much every other month. So like you kind of knew what you were getting into, and it feels like Nintendo is kind of just like putting out the base game, have a couple things planned that like, you know, maybe they planned on doing in development and just didn't have time for, and then pushing them out a couple months later and leaving it to die. So I think if they want to do the live service thing, they have to start doing it right, and they know how to do it right.
Yeah.
I also think that, like, the Switch and Nintendo themselves just aren't really, and we've talked about this a ton before, just aren't really set up for multiplayer and supporting multiplayer, like, at all. Like, if you look at stuff like Xbox or PlayStation, like, multiplayer is, like, literally built into how the OS works on those systems. It's all about making parties, joining people, playing other games, finding people playing other games. You know, like, communication is built into the console, so you always have ways to communicate with people. Both consoles are now going to have Discord, which is just absolutely wild and incredible. not great for, you know, the multiplayer voice monopoly that is Discord, but still great because that's it is what it is, right? Like, if you want to talk to someone for playing a game, you're pretty much using Discord. And Nintendo just doesn't have that. They don't have the discoverability and the want for people to communicate and find people playing games in multiplayer. It just isn't there. And so people just aren't attracted to that.
I mean, you look at PlayStation, they launched the PlayStation 5 and their party chat system wasn't great, you know, on release day. And people said to PlayStation, hey, this sucks, you need to fix it. Their first major update for the console software fixed the party invite system, the party chat stuff, because they knew it was a core part of their console requirement that people wanted, so they worked on it. Whereas Nintendo have been since day dot, oh yeah, you want to talk online, get out your mobile phone. It's like...
Yeah, which, like, I just want to point out that, like, I don't think that, like, the mobile phone solution is an inherently bad one, right? Like, in theory, it's not a terrible idea because, like, obviously, like, we're working with very limited hardware with the Switch, right? It's using a mobile chipset, and it has, like, quite limited RAM, right? So there's 3.5 gigabytes of RAM available to developers to use in their games, which means that everything else has to run on that 500 megabytes. That's the entire OS. That's any Bluetooth communication. It's you know, even... the, you know, reading and writing of games. Obviously, a lot of that is done by the CPU, but, like, you need to have RAM to available to run those basic system processes. So I understand, like, not wanting to, like, add any more to that and potentially lower the ceiling for performance in games, which, as we already know, is quite low. The problem is that it's not a good system, right? Like, you can only join the voice chat if you're in a game in a mode that uses the voice chat. Like, you can't just join a voice chat party.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, even, like, with things like Splatoon, right? Like, it'll just, like, kick you out and bring you back in. And, like, the voice chat is just poorly implemented. So I don't think, like... Also, I think that, like, the way that they've done, like, audio is, like, kind of suck. The fact that you have to buy, like, a third-party thing to, like, mix audio between, like, your phone and your Switch is, like, real dumb. And that should have been a solution that they came up with from day dot.
That's really the main issue that I have with having the separate device is that you can't mix, or, you know, it's complicated to mix your chat audio with your game audio. And that realistically, that's what you want. Like, no one wants to have, like, a separate earpiece listening to voice chat and then, you know, listen to game audio. It's just completely stupid. And again, yes, I get that it's, you know, hardware limitations, blah, 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 blah. But I'll say it a million times and I'll say it again. Nintendo designed it. They could have just not designed it that way, and they chose not to do it. It wasn't like when the Switch came out, voice chat wasn't a thing. It was freaking huge. They just chose
especially
because
like there's other systems like the PS Vita, which like what that has like 128 megabytes of RAM, 256, right? And they still managed to get voice chat like system wide in that. Like it can be done. It's just like
the Nintendo DS had a headset.
The development priorities for the Switch didn't allow for them to do that, and that's entirely on Nintendo, right? Like, they could have changed those priorities so that they did allow to do that, right?
I mean,
if it just meant,
Switch,
like... Yeah, go on.
I was just saying, if they update the Switch so I can use my Wii Speak that came with my Animal Crossing from the Wii, that'd be okay.
Oh my god.
Yeah. And I think, it's like... Right, like, if Nintendo had just added, like, another 512 megabyte module of RAM, and like that's the system RAM, right? And then, you know, still only offer 3.5 gigabytes to developers, and then have that extra 500 megabytes that they've just freed up just for voice chat stuff, like that would have been fine. But then obviously you're adding
and folders in that 500 megabytes of RAM, please.
The other thing too is like, sorry, go ahead.
No.
I was gonna say the other thing too is it's not as if Japan is against, you know, chatting. Asia in general, they've got a big thing. You know, they use like WhatsApp and Telegram and all that sort of stuff. They'll record themselves speaking and then send it as an audio file as part of WhatsApp to people, rather than typing out messages, because the inherent language support for mobile devices isn't great. So when I was in Japan, you know, I'd see people having conversations by recording, you know, messages and then sending them through WhatsApp, and then they'd listen to somebody's response, you know. That's a whole extra step rather than just having a phone call. But, you know, they were doing that and they were comfortable doing that. They were doing it on the street. They were doing it on the train platform. So they're definitely able to do so. They're willing to do so. Just Nintendo, for whatever reason, seems to, you know, ignore what people do and decide this is the beat they want to have.
And we're not even talking about text chat either, which just doesn't exist.
Yeah. Which, like, you know, after the whole Picto chat thing, like, I understand them being, like, real real dicey about that. But
oh, God.
Yeah. Either way, Nintendo, get your shit together. You can do better than this. You've done better than this.
Narrator, they did not.
All right, so moving on. Nintendo randomly dropped the news on Twitter, because apparently Nintendo Directs don't exist anymore, that Bayonetta 3 actually exists somehow, and it's coming to Switch on October 28th. So the game features a coven of multiple Bayonettas as you fight through multiple real-world locations, such as Japan and China. And it also introduces a new playable witch, Viola, who uses a sword and a demon cat named Cheshire to, like, kick the ass of the enemies, which is dope as heck. So, I don't know, what do we think, first of all, of the trailer and of the game in general? Like, are you planning on picking it up?
Yeah, I was excited. I mean, if you enjoy Bayonetta, you're going to enjoy more of this Bayonetta, like, 100%.
There's more Bayonetta, so you can Bayonetta while you Bayonetta.
Pretty much. Yeah. And there's even less Bayonetta for people who have sensitive eyes.
Yeah, so that's, cool. That's the other thing, right? So they have this, and I love that they've named it this, it's the naive angel mode, which basically just, like, all of the nudity that's kind of inherent to Bayonetta's powers, because it is inherent to her powers. When she uses her powers, her clothes come off. There's a mode where you can just, like, tick a box and it won't take her clothes off when she uses her powers. And it also, like, changes a couple enemies designed to, like, you know, not show nipples on a character with gigantic boobs, because apparently that's the major concern with that. But it was very funny because the tweets were like, oh yeah, so you can, you know, play this in the lounge room or in your bedroom without other people worrying about you, which is very funny. But yeah, so it does have that. But yeah, I mean, it looks like Bayonetta. I don't know really what more to say about it.
I was excited for this game, like, 4 years ago. The fact that, you know, this was announced in December of 2017 and it's coming out in October of 2018, it's literally 4 years, 10.5 months between its announcement and its release, which is one of the longest games I've ever seen from Nintendo. That's not counting the ones that get delayed all the time, because delays, you know, that's another thing. But these are the ones where they're announced and then we just hear nothing from them, like Metroid Prime 4. Don't get me wrong, I think it'll be a fun game. I think it'll be good. But I'm just, it's like, okay, cool, it's more Bayonetta. Why is this one different? Why should we care about this one? And unfortunately, they've not said anything about why we should care, so.
I mean, like, the trailer now, it looks gorgeous. Like, they've done a great job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we know from previous Bayonetta games that it's almost certainly just going to run at 60 FPS as well, so, and probably be quite solid on that. Although, again, like, Astral Chain, same kind of engine, runs at 30 FPS, so. Hard to say. But yeah, it does look good. And, like, the thing is, I think for most Bayonetta fans, right, it doesn't really matter what it's bringing new to the table, right? If it's exactly the same as all the previous Bayonetta games, but more Bayonetta, I think most people will be fine with that. It's exactly the same as, like, Pokemon, right? It's like, I don't need anything, like, new or groundbreaking for Pokemon. Like, I'm happy with the way that Pokemon works, so I'm happy with a new Pokemon game if it's exactly the same thing, but with a new storyline and new things. Yeah,
we won't open that can of worms any further. But I will say, though, the Bayonetta stuff is the same as Devil May Cry. There's now 5 Devil May Cry games, and apart from the story, it's the same combat and all that. What I'm interested, though, is in this, what do they call it? The Trinity Edition or something? The special edition that they're offering?
Trinity Masquerade Edition.
There you go. Yeah. I knew you had Trinity in the name. But yeah, so the, you know, this special edition that comes with 3 covers, because they're doing a physical print for Bayonetta 1 now on Switch. So we'll be able to have Bayonetta 1, 2, and 3 in these fancy covers.
God, I really hope they re-release number 2.
Well,
so you can actually make them available.
So Bayonetta 2 is only available secondhand now because they've stopped printing it, but they've not mentioned anything about it. So, you know, if you're coming into the series for the first time and you get this Trinity edition because you want this fancy, you know, 3 game, you know, piece of art, you either have to buy a blank game case off eBay for your Switch and to stick the second one in there, or you know, have to wait for Nintendo to announce another one.
I think it'll be a pretty dumb / poor move to not re-release number 2, but that's exactly Nintendo's wheelhouse, so who knows, well, quite frankly.
I would absolutely never have predicted that they would like do a physical print of Bayonetta 1.
Yeah,
like,
true. Very
4
true.
Years after it came out on the Switch, so, you know, that's something. But I mean, I think most people that want to buy the Trinity Masquerade Edition probably have physical copies of Bayonetta 2 anyway. But yeah, I mean, like, I really do hope that they do a reprint of 2. And, like, it's not the kind of thing that Nintendo would announce. They wouldn't say, hey, we're reprinting Bayonetta 2, because, like, officially, like, nothing is out of print until, you know, the console's dead. And that's many years off, right? Like technically, according to Nintendo, Xenoblade Chronicles 2 is still in print. But, like, I haven't seen a copy of that on the shelves for many years now. So, yeah. It'll be nice if they get some more copies out on shelves, because I think, like, being able to have all three of them on shelves, like, come this holiday season is going to be really good for people interested in buying, like, the whole collection for people. I'm also hoping that when they do that, they drop the price of the Bayonetta 2 physical edition, because it's, like, obviously a $90 release, because previous prints of it have come with a digital copy of Bayonetta 1. But on the eShop, I think it's only, like, $60, and then the other one is, like, $30 or something. I can't remember. You get, like, a weird discount, a conditional discount on the eShop that, like, adds up to $90. Although, like, it's a bad deal if you use your vouchers on that, because for some reason Bayonetta 2 is on the voucher system rather than, like, the bundle being on the voucher system. I don't know. Their vouchers are in a weird place.
I'm gonna call this out here. So I wrote an opinion piece that still hasn't gone out yet about the Amiibo and Nintendo's lack of Amiibo stuff. There's no Bayonetta support for Amiibo. There's no Amiibo support in Bayonetta 3. Yep. So even though Bayonetta 2 had Amiibo support and Bayonetta has two Amiibo because of Smash Brothers, there's no support for Bayonetta Amiibo in Bayonetta 3, which is a bit of a shame, because I'm not saying
100% okay with that. Like, I'm not saying you need to run around as Peach, Amiibo, but I'm just saying. No, I'm just over adding Amiibo support to games where Amiibo not goddamn available. Like, just don't do it. It's stupid.
Yeah.
The general point of my little opinion piece, which should go up sometime this week, is that Nintendo seem to have abandoned Amiibo, but they're not willing to kill off Amiibo. So.
Yeah. They need to, you know, piss or get off the pot, right? Like, they either need to, like, commit to Amiibo and make them available, or, like, add an app or something where you can, you know, something in the system where you can, like, spend $2 on an Amiibo token and then that's on your account forever. Or just stop doing Amiibo altogether. Because, like, doing it halfway is, Nintendo Creed, but yeah, go on.
I just had, like, a nightmare, like, Amiibo NFT scenario come into my brain, and I wish I could unthink that.
I will raise this. So Disney Infinity, when that launched, would release a card with the figure, and the card had a code, and you would go to the website and you put the code in and they would give you a digital copy of the figure. So if you went to a different platform or you went to the PC version, you didn't have to rescan in the figure. You could just log into your account and you had the digital version there as well.
Yeah. And so, in Starlink Battle for Atlas as well, had the option to just, like, buy the pieces on the shop. And even in some cases, just, like, earn a couple pieces in game. So, like, I don't know. It feels like a solved problem.
Earning content in game. Novel.
But yeah, so Bayonetta 3 coming out October. Now for the exciting one. All of us were surprised that this is a thing that happened. So this was just another random Twitter drop. Nintendo announced a new competitive Kirby racing-ish party game called Kirby's Dream Cafe. So in Kirby's Dream Cafe, I said buffet.
That cafe was in business.
So in Kirby's Dream Buffet, up to 4 players compete online and offline. There was a bit of confusion about this to begin with, because, like, only the Japanese account tweeted about the fact that you could play online, but you can 100% play online in obstacle courses with a rolling Kirby where you have to just eat as much food as you can and, like, be the chonkiest Kirby at the end of the match. So, yeah, whoever eats the most wins, and, you know, the game is coming out sometime in the next month or so, because Nintendo Australia said it would come out in winter, and there's only, like, you know, 37 days left of winter, so it'll be out then. So I think this looks great. Like, everybody...
Really?
Like, everybody in my feed was like, wow, Kirby Fall Guys. And, like, I mean, that's kind of the vibe that they're giving off here.
And it hands down has the greatest freeze frame of a Kirby in any trailer. It is glorious.
Yeah.
I there's two things that worry me about this one. One is the fact that it's not free to play, and it definitely just seems like it would be an ideal free to play game.
Yeah, well, we don't actually like strictly know if it's free to play or not.
Well, so they've said that Nintendo Switch Online membership is required to play online.
Yeah.
In like, the eShop listing, it's there to say you have to have the membership.
Kind of be true even if it was free. If it was like a free...
Fall Guys doesn't say that. Fall Guys and Fortnite don't say that.
If it's a free game for Nintendo Switch Online users, which it could be, and not available to other people, then it would say the same thing, like Tetris 99.
For sure. I feel like, though, like if it was going to be free, like for Nintendo Switch Online users, they would have... They should have said that.
They should have said that, yeah.
A weird thing to omit.
So that's my one thing, is that they're going to like ask for like $30 for this game. But the other part is I'm also worried it's going to be very, very light on content. Not light as in, you know, there's not going to be enough strawberries for the Kirbys to eat because, you know, they get chunky at the end of the trailer. But just in general, I don't think there's going to be a lot of variety in what the game is going to offer. I think it's going to be the same, like maybe six courses or something. So I'm just worried that they're going to ask for a lot of money for a game that's going to have a lot of content. It'll be a full course run. There you go. But yeah, that's my concern on this one. Like, it does look like fun, but I don't know if it'll be, you know, enough if they ask for money for it.
Yeah, I mean, like it's I don't know. It seems obvious to me that they're definitely going to ask for money for it. But
which is a bit of a shame because I feel like if they didn't, this would actually probably survive more than like a day.
Yeah, I mean, like I don't know. It kind of needs. I don't know. There's never going to be a free-to-play game that doesn't have a monetization scheme, right? And, like, what monetization scheme could you do for a rolling Kirby, right?
I mean, Tetris 99 is technically free-to-play. I mean, it's not technically, but, you know, there's no monetization. You don't have to unlock things or anything, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. But, like, you can also just, like, spend the $30 to get the offline content, too, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm in a weird space with, like, these kind of, like, small Kirby games, right? Because, like, $30 isn't, like, a lot of money, right? And for a small, like, focused experience like that, I don't think that's, like, unreasonable to ask.
Look, I think it's not, but, like, at $30, this game is DOA. Like, this isn't the way the world works, like, at all.
Absolutely,
like,
yeah.
It isn't, $30 isn't too much to ask this game. Like, I totally agree with you. I think it's totally reasonable. But, like, we don't think like the majority of people, it seems, so... It would just immediately die.
Yeah. But, like, if it was, like, in the $15 space, I could see it being a hell of a lot more successful.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like $15 is, like, kind of in that sweet spot where, like, you would just buy it on a whim. I say that having just bought a bunch of $15 games in the Switch sales. So $15 is, like, really right in that sweet spot where it's like, well, I'm kind of interested in this, so I'll grab it. But yeah, I am worried about the amount of content that's available for a paid experience, and like whether there's going to be updates to it that bring more stuff. Or yeah, it's kind of hard to know. But like from like a conceptual point, I am like 100% on board. It looks incredible.
Yeah.
The gameplay seems hella fun.
I just worry that, you know, even if it is $15, you look on the eShop, you'll have $15 for Kirby Dream Buffet or free for Fall Guys. And Fall Guys is absolutely loaded with content. So,
and that's like kind of the other part of it as well, is that like they've really sort of launched this at the wrong time because Fall Guys just came out. It's very much on the forefront of people's minds and it's 100% free. Like you don't have to pay for anything. Like there is nothing in that game where you strictly benefit from paying a cent, right? It's just skins and shit. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know. It's weird. There's also like a weird situation. So I said in the thing that it's like exclusively on the eShop, but like in the press release provided from Nintendo of America, it says that it'll be available at retail as well, which like, that's a weird thing to say.
Maybe as a download card?
Well, that's what I thought as well. But then like, it also says like it'll be available on the eShop, on the My Nintendo store and at retail. But like My Nintendo store... Weird. In the US is like kind of physical games or like digital versions of physical games. So like, I don't know, it could just be like a leftover, like they copied and pasted from a previous, you know, press release. But yeah, it's, I don't know, it's typical Nintendo of America being a little bit unclear about things that are very easy to make clear. But yeah, so I'm really interested in it. I'll definitely buy it and check it out, but I don't expect it to have legs, and I don't expect it to make a gigantic impact. Like, this isn't going to be like the big game that takes over Twitch for the next 6 months, like Fall Guys was.
Yeah. I want to call out a new story. You didn't put it in here, Ollie, but I just thought of it then. The Lego Bowser figure.
Oh, yeah.
So in between the recording of the last show and this one, there's a massive Lego Bowser figure announced. And I think it looks very, very cool because it's a puppet.
It looks incredible, but it's so expensive.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, what, it's like 400 and something in Australia?
No, it's like, just under 400, I think. From memory.
All right, so like $399.
Just under 400, that's fine.
I know the money's there.
Yeah, it's like $249. But yeah, it's very expensive. Although it looks cool as heck. And it's like, you know, do I buy a Splatoon OLED or do I buy a big Lego Bowser?
Well, I just think it's amazing that it's an actual puppet. Like there's levers and all sorts of stuff that you can manipulate. Yeah.
I kind of like that, apart from, like, the regular sort of, like, little Mario playsets with the little digital Mario thing, all of the other stuff that Nintendo's done has been, like, really, like, tactile and interesting, right? So, like, the NES with the Lego NES with the, like, the Mario that, like, jumps through the course is, like, so clever. And even, like, the question block, yeah. Is really interesting. Like, it's just filled with really dope stuff. I really like that Nintendo's approach to this Lego stuff isn't just like, oh, here's a display thing that you can put on your shelf. It's like there's actual like utility to it. Not utility in that like it's useful for something. It's still just like a plaything that most of the time is going to be on your shelf. But they're doing something interesting with like a medium like Lego. Which
So the Mario, Luigi, and Peach figures, because Peach is out on August 1st, they interact with it as well. So if you throw Mario on it, on the little sensor thing, you'll play the music from the boss fight from Mario 64 as you have your Mario in there. And I did double check the price. It is $399.99. So I was right. It's just under 400.
Just under 400. Under 400 as you could possibly get.
Yeah. But yeah, I just thought it was cool, and I just remembered at Comic-Con, which is on this weekend as we're recording, there is a 4-ton version of Lego Bowser.
Yeah, it looks terrifying. I saw the things of it. It's like one of those like Disney animatronics kinds of things. Like it's genuinely terrifying. There was somebody, like, I saw in the comments to it, somebody was like, oh, can I take it home after the show? And I was like, I don't think you have enough money to spend on that. Alrighty, so moving on to our featured discussion. So this isn't something that we usually talk about a great deal on the podcast or on the website, but we've seen a number of high-profile leaks for Nintendo games over the last few years, with the frequency and the scope of those leaks seemingly growing with time. In the age of the internet, people working from home and gigantic 1,000-person-plus projects, putting a cork in that bottle is probably... It's far too late. So leaks are here to stay, and there's nothing anyone can do to stop them. It's going to happen with the society that we have set up and the way that the games industry works. So today I thought we'd talk a little bit about leaks themselves. Not the content of leaks. I'm not going to go into that because that is a legally iffy area, and I don't want to be sued by Nintendo. The people who leak things and how it affects sort of everyone involved. So sort of the first thing that I want to like ask is like what people's opinions on leaks for video games are. I'm talking things like, you know, there's a whole bunch of Pokemon stuff that like leaked recently, and you know, previous things with like when Mario and Rabbids Kingdom Battle leaked like years ago, or even, you know, people were talking about Metroid a few days before that was announced. Like what do people generally kind of, what's the vibe on leaks? Particularly in relation to Nintendo games, but just in general, because we've seen with Naughty Dog recently having a whole bunch of Last of Us remake stuff leaked as well. So yeah, what's the vibe? What do you guys think?
I think I got to draw a distinction between leaks and spoiler leaks, if that makes sense. Like, I don't actually really give much of a shit about leaks in general. Like, whatever. I think leaking stuff that is spoilery to the story of a game or something like that is crap. Like, that's just annoying to people, because that sometimes that stuff is just impossible to avoid. Like, you yep. try to avoid it so much, and then all of a sudden, like, bam, you come across a thread or a tweet pops up in your feed, whatever it is, right? And, like, you just can't avoid that. But I think, like, leaking of a game in of itself, like, I don't think is a spoiler. Like, that is, it is meant to exist and be discussed at some point. Like, it is going to get announced. It's just going to be marketing. But leaking, like, specific things that would be considered a spoiler, I think is garbage.
I'm a little more cynical on that one, just because. So last year, Nintendo themselves leaked Mario plus Rabbids Sparks of Hope. They pushed their page for it live like 10 hours before the game was officially announced. So something like that, where, you know, it's just a preempted reveal. You know, that's fine. These things happen. My thing with leaks is when you have journalist X who, for months and months, goes on, oh, yeah, no, I've talked to this guy from this company who said that this game's coming, and it's known as Project Blah. You know, that's my thing. So, as you said, like, with the spoiler stuff, yeah, that thing, that sucks, because it just ruins things. But in terms of if a company or somebody just says, oh, yeah, no, a mate of mine said that, you know, Mario Kart 9's coming next year, and then they go, well, hang on, I wasn't supposed to say that, you know, that's fine. But I hate these ones that the people that sit there and constantly hype up the fact they know something. Like, oh, you know, I know this game's coming.
Yeah,
it's the old I know something you don't know mentality.
Yeah. Like, I feel like I think there's another distinction there. Like, I feel like if we were talking about the same thing, I probably wouldn't consider that a leak. That's just someone randomly saying some bullshit somewhere that, like, is probably going to be true. Like, someone saying Mario Kart 9 is in development. Like, no shit. Like, of course it is. That's like, it is in development. Like, who knows when it's coming out? But Nintendo is 100% working on it. Like, yeah, like, it is a thing. So, like, that type of stuff I don't really consider leaks, because I feel like it's just 99% of the time it's just people just drooling garbage.
Yeah. So, yeah, I will say that, like, I'm kind of, like, on the same page as Michael here, is that, like, a leak that something exists, like, who gives a shit, right? Like, I don't know. We know about, like, that movies exist, like, 10 years in advance, especially with, like, Marvel stuff, right? Like, we've just had, like, all of this Marvel stuff announced, and it, like, goes through to, like, you know, 2025, and it's like, well, okay, well, you know, we know that there's going to be, like, you know, a Marvel movie in 2025. Cool, right? Like, I don't think that's, like, a big deal if that. It's like, you know, if screenshots of something, like, a leaked. A lot of the time it comes from, like, QA or something like that, or localization. And that kind of, it takes the wind out of public conversation about the thing when it finally does get announced officially or revealed officially. And I feel like that kind of has a bit of a negative impact on how people interact with games and games marketing. Because, okay, we can say, I was like, well, you know, it's just ads, but, like, we've heard from developers in the past that, like, when these kinds of leaks happen, it can, like, really seriously affect morale, right? Because, like, we can say, oh, you know, it's just ads, but, like, developers themselves work on these kinds of trailers and screenshots and promotional stuff like that, because they want to show off the cool things that they've made, right? So when those things leak early and it's completely out of their control, right, yes, it's like dealing a blow to, like, the big evil marketing people, but, like, it's also like, it's also hurting the actual developers behind the project as well. And, like, I think that's something that people don't really think about all that much. Now, there have been cases where, like, leaks have actually kind of helped a game a little bit. So one of the ones that I think is a really good example of this is when Mario & Rabbids Kingdom Battle leaked initially, right? A lot of people got the sort of shock and mocking out of their system to begin with, so when the game was actually finally revealed, they were kind of primed to be surprised by it. But we know from people at the studio that, like, that was, like, just heart-crushing for the people actually working on the game, right? It's like they had to read all of this horrible negative feedback about something that they didn't get the chance to show off properly first. So, yeah, it's kind of one of those things where it...
The problem with leaks like that especially is that it's like if you're baking a cake and somebody takes a photo of it when you've just mixed all the batter and it's not gone in the oven, it's still technically a cake, but it's not the finished product. So you couldn't just, you know, cut a slice up and give it to somebody. So you're looking at something that it's not finished. It's not its final form. So anytime you're going to try and taste test that cake, you're going to get a bad result. It's like, so, you know, I'm going to spoil Mandalorian here for people who haven't seen the second season yet. But
spoiler warning, spoiler warning.
But when you know, the end of the episode, you know, end of second season happened, or second volume, and Luke Skywalker came in, right? We had casting leaks, you know, for a year out about Rosario Dawson being cast as Ahsoka Tano and Bo-Katan and all these other characters. And people were like, oh, cool. Nothing for Luke Skywalker leaked, because everyone working on it was like, okay, we need to keep this quiet because it's going to be such an amazing thing. And the end result for that was that when people watched it, everyone just kind of went, oh, what the hell? They just blew their minds. Yeah. Same thing.
I feel like that's a very exceptional circumstance, because a lot of the time leaks aren't coming from people directly working on something. They're coming from some weird ancillary. Someone sent some marketing to someone over an email. Someone else intercepted it, or someone forwarded some, you know, BS. Like, a lot of the time, it's not coming from people directly working with stuff.
Well, there was that one for a guy from Eidos Montreal who was working on Shadow of the Tomb Raider.
Yeah,
that was leaked because he was working on a presentation on the train. So somebody just happened to look over to his laptop and saw the PowerPoint pack. And that's not the point I was making. Is that when there's a big spectacle, a big, you know, reveal happening, when you experience that, when you go in blind and you experience that moment, it's just so phenomenal. So my thing is, whenever I see people and they literally, you know, they stand up there and they start talking about how, oh, you know, Luke Skywalker is going to be in it, you know, if that was out 6 months ago.
Mm.
I mean, who's that for? It's not for the audience, because the audience, they would have wanted to experience that. So, yeah, I mean, I can tell you this. Okay. FIFA 23 is officially announced, but I'm sitting on, you know, like another 6 embargoes for content for that game. And I've already seen people in forums talking about things they're not supposed to be talking about, because there's so much that EA are doing for this release. They want to give everything its own time in the sun to say, hey, okay, we've got this feature, we've got this feature, we've got this feature. And people are trying to spoil it because they just want they're just doing it for whatever reason they think it's cool. That's my thing, is anytime somebody leaks something, they're doing it because they themselves think it makes them look cool, and I just don't think it does. I think it makes them look like an idiot.
But I think, like, sometimes, this is where things get really iffy, it really looks like stuff has been leaked by the people who have made them. I think a prime example of this, again, spoiler alert, Spider-Man No Way Home, the leaks about the other Spider-Man being in that movie, right?
Yep.
Like, I truly want to believe that was just some random dude, you know, with a cast photo leaking that. But goddamn, does that look like that was some, like, hype machine shit from the Disney marketing team? And it worked, like, insanely well. Like,
well, that's the thing, right? It's like, we know that companies do this. Like, we know for a fact that, like, Ubisoft has used this kind of, you know, leak strategy to, like, drum up silent hype about it. And, like, it can be really difficult to sort of discern that kind of thing, because, like, you don't know if it's, you know, like, a leak on, you know, 4chan or whatever could be, like, somebody who's working in QA and happened to, like, snap a pic and could get in, like, serious trouble. Or it could be, like, you know, the brainchild of, like, 14 marketing executives from Ubisoft who have, like, meticulously crafted this to happen at the exact right time. So, like, it gets really, really complex sometimes. And the other thing, right, is that, like, so there's these threads on Resetera, which is a website that a lot of industry people use, asking about, like, how do game leaks actually affect your studio. And a lot of the responses there, it's not necessarily about, like, oh, you know, marketing money was, you know, thrown down the drain or whatever. It's that, like, oftentimes when a leak happens, it's not always known where it's come from, so superiors are quite often suspicious of their employees, which creates a kind of a hostile work environment for them. And then, you know, it could be, you know, some guy in QA of, like, a team of 300 people leaked the, you know, took a screenshot and shared it on 4chan, and then the entire QA studio gets let go. And, like, that's, like, absolutely devastating. Nobody should be losing their job because, like, one arsehole decided to, like, snap a pic before they should have. It's one of those situations where, like, there's so many, like, shades of grey in this, like, you can't definitively say, like, leaks are objectively good or objectively bad. Because, like, a lot of leaks do actually inform consumers, right? Like, there have been leaks in the past where we've learned stuff about games that are quite negative, and the companies sure as shit weren't going to tell us about that beforehand. But on the other hand, sort of like what Luke alluded to there, was that like sometimes the reason for like spreading these things out and sort of drip feeding information, so something like FIFA or other games, right, is like if they're adding a lot of new features, they kind of want like the messaging to be around those new features, not necessarily because it hypes people up, but because having them spread out allows people to actually see what's available in it, right? If you just like dropped a list of like all of the new features in FIFA 23, people will like, the public conversation around that game is going to be focused on some of the bigger ones, so people might not hear about the smaller features that might actually interest them and improve their experience with the game, and they may never actually go and buy that game and enjoy it because they don't know that that feature's there. So there are a lot of leaks that do help inform the public, and then there are a lot of leaks that really just muddy the messaging and mean that people won't buy games that they actually enjoy. As I said, there is no like right or wrong answer here. There's good leaks and there's bad leaks, and like just in general, we sort of have to think about where these come from.
Yeah. With Microsoft, the Microsoft Store, they're forever leaking things because
yeah.
For whatever reason, they either publish too soon or they set the auto-publish date to be the wrong way around or whatever, who knows. So they're forever leaking things on that store. And that's just an unfortunate thing. They're not being malicious in that. My only issue is the ones that are being malicious that, you know, like I remember E3 2019, there was a guy for like a week or two before the showcase, or the week even started, was saying how he was going to leak everything from the Nintendo Direct days before it was, you know, shown to the world. And the only reason I remember this is because I was in LA and Ollie and Vooks were back here, and he was doing it. And then in the end, the Nintendo ninjas got to him and, you know, gave him a cease and desist to say, you're not allowed to talk about anything we do now, rah, rah, rah. It was just so hilarious to see this guy who built his entire brand on the fact that he leaks things got punished for, you know, essentially trying to leak things he knew he wasn't supposed to do. Because that's the other thing too. Yeah, sorry, go ahead. I was going to say, I was going to make the point.
Edit this out. This has to stay in.
I was going to make the point that, so, you know, I mentioned the FIFA thing. I've been on like 24 things this year, if not more, for, you know, game reveals. Hey, we're doing this. We've got a new season of content coming. We're announcing a new game, all that sort of stuff. So I sign, you know, non-disclosure agreements and embargoes, and, you know, I agree to all these terms and conditions for these events. And anytime I go to one, like, for example, I went to play Mario Strikers early down at Nintendo for Vooks. And when I went there, you know, it's like a 3-page document about what we can talk about, what we can't talk about. There are financial, you know, there's a potential for financial punishment if I break that embargo, if I break that agreement. To the point where, you know, obviously they'll just ban me. They'll say, cool, you broke it. You're not getting anything from us anymore. There's also, you know, as I said, financial costs. So the people that are doing this, they're trying to do it under the auspice of anonymity because, again, it tries to make them look cool, whereas they're just hurting everyone else.
Yeah. And, like, you're right. Like, there is, like, financial penalty for people who leak stuff. And I think, like, some of that goes a bit far. Like, I've finished Xenoblade Chronicles 3. Like, I've 100% finished that game. I could, like, spoil the ending right now, but I would be paying Nintendo tens of thousands of dollars if I did that. But, like, I think, like, the only, like, really frustrating thing with, like, leakers for me, like, I don't care if somebody, like, leaks that a game exists. What really frustrates me is that, like, you know, 2 hours before a direct goes up, somebody will, like, leak the entire list of it. And it's like, what do you gain from that, right? Like, what does anybody gain from that? It's, like, 2 hours away. People are going to find out soon anyway. It's like when Dark Souls was going to be in the Nintendo Direct, and Kotaku UK ran an article 45 minutes before the Direct aired that Dark Souls was coming to Switch. And it's like, that's a pretty transparent, like, attempt to preempt traffic, right? Like, you're trying to get all the traffic for that particular story. And, like, that's just kind of shitty, right? It's like, because obviously somebody told you that in confidence, or, you know, you had access to things that you weren't supposed to have access to, or something like that. And, like, it doesn't serve anyone but the people talking about it. Like, that doesn't serve the public to tell somebody that a game is coming 2 hours before it's announced to be coming. It doesn't help anybody except the person talking about it. And I don't know, it's just, it kind of sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you have any, like, opinions on leaks and stuff, like, obviously don't, you know, post leaks into our Discord and stuff. Like, if you have thoughts about leaks in general and the people who leak things, like, tell us, like, let us know, because, like, it is a really complex conversation, so, yeah. So, in the month of July, on the 8th of July, we've got AI the Somnium Files Nirvana Initiative, which is already out in the rest of the world. But for some reason, well, not for some reason, in Europe it was delayed physically, and then they delayed it digitally to match that, so people who were playing digitally wouldn't spoil it for people who played physically, despite the fact that North America and Japan already has the game and has spoiled everything on Twitter. And also, Klonoa Fantasy Reverie Series comes out on the same day.
I'm sorry, what was that game called again?
Cloaca.
There we go.
But yeah, so that's coming out on the same day. We'll probably have a review for it at some point. On the 12th of July, there's an interesting game called Fist Forged in Shadow Torch. So this is something that I didn't know even really existed. It just, like, I saw it in the coming soon section on the Switch and thought it looked really interesting. It's like some Metroidvania style thing.
Yeah, so it actually released last year for PS4 and PC and PS5. And they announced it last week as getting a physical release for those platforms. And as part of the announcement that it was getting a physical release, they went, oh, by the way, it's also coming to Switch.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, just it's the weirdest way ever of announcing a game.
Yeah.
You play as a rabbit who has a giant fist. Giant mechanical fist.
It has a really interesting art style, I think. And the gameplay just looks super bonkers. So I'm really here for it. On the 21st of July, there's River City Saga, Three Kingdoms, which somebody, I can't remember who, somebody I follow on Twitter was like going nuts about the fact that there's going to be another River City game, and it's like set based on like the Romance of the Three Kingdoms. So,
dude, I did not know that this existed.
About the River City Saga. Yeah.
There
you go. You found who it was on Twitter that was going absolutely nuts for the game.
I mean, he will be after this. I tweeted so fast at 88 miles per hour, went back into the past.
So yeah, it looks really interesting. It's a River City game.
Yeah, look at it looks, right now. God
it damn. Looks dope. So yeah, that's the 21st of July. On the 22nd of July, there's the Capcom Arcade Second Stadium, which is just more Capcom arcade stuff. And the game that I've already forgotten how it's said is Live Alive. There we go. That's the one. Which has a demo on the eShop now as well. Although apparently it's like kind of boring.
The progress does carry across to the full release. So.
It does, yeah. On the 28th of July is Azure Striker Gunvolt 3, which I've been looking forward to for such a long time. I love the Gunvolt games, so I'm super excited that this is coming out on the 28th of July.
So Angelo's just sitting there just watching his River City trailer, just bobbing his head along.
I'm so into this! How did I not know about it? The art style looks incredible!
And on the 29th of July, we've got Xenoblade Chronicles 3, also known as the 2022 Game of the Year, and Digimon Survive. I've actually been playing, I think I can talk about, yeah, because this is going to come out after the preview embargo. I've been playing Xenoblade Chronicles 3, and it's so good. Just such a step up from Xenoblade Chronicles 2 in every aspect. So, yeah.
Including performance?
Yes, including performance. Okay. It does look a hell of a lot better than 2 did. There are points
two
where it like
and ran like out of garbage.
Yeah, so they've definitely like they've improved it, but like there's still parts where like it's gonna look a bit dodge. But like for the most part, it's a hell of a lot clearer than 2.
It honestly makes you wonder what packed with what demon did the people at Monolith make to get a game looking that good on Switch. Not saying it looks the best game, it's not the best looking game on Switch, just saying like for the
size
of the
world. I think
they
made a pact with the same demon that made Monster Hunter Rise. Because that's an also very good looking game. Digimon Survive also comes out on the same day, which I don't know if anyone's going to play Digimon Survive because it feels like the, you know, the target audience for Digimon Survive and Xenoblade Chronicles 3, if expressed in a Venn diagram, is just a straight circle. But I'm looking forward to that. And yeah, that's everything that's coming out in July. There'll obviously be stuff that like gets announced and, you know, shadow drops and stuff that I've forgotten about or couldn't find information on. But
that's the list as it stands today.
Yeah. If there's anything like huge, I'm sure we'll talk about it in future episodes in the news section anyway. So
yeah, I want to point out Capcom Arcade Second Stadium is both a stupid name and B an utterly pointless thing when they were releasing DLC packs for the first one in the first place. Why they couldn't just release more DLC?
The second one is like free as well, so like it's a free base game, and you get like a couple included.
You get one game with it. Yeah,
one game.
I love how you say. I love how you say that it's a stupid name, and it's listed right beside Live Alive.
Oh no, Live Alive! No, I'm getting started in that one. That is even worse. But it's like they went, oh, we're making a second arcade stadium game. Cool. What should we call it? How about Capcom Stadium? Capcom Arcade Stadium 2? No, that's too simple. Let's go Capcom Arcade Second Stadium.
Yeah, I don't know. Sure. But yeah, like they could have just released those arcade games as DLC for the first one. But I guess like having a new like a recently released section in the eShop is more important to them. But yeah, if we missed anything, let us know. We'll talk about it. I don't think
looking at the games, they really should have released them as DLC. Goddamn.
Yeah.
Well, the sad thing too is all these Capcom games are either in like the Street Fighter collection, the recently released Fighters collection, the other arcade collection that Capcom have done. Like Capcom have made like 9 different collections on Switch. At this point, I'm like, how many other games have they got left to release in another collection?
So yeah, let's talk about the games we're playing. Michael, you only have a couple things, so do you want to?
Yes. So I've been playing. Oh, I played some Raft with some mates recently. So the Raft is a game on PC. We start off on a raft in the middle of an ocean. That's a really dumb way of describing it, but basically it's like a survival game. So you start on a raft that's like a 2x2 like square, and you slowly collect like scrap and build out your raft. Then you have to try and find islands to gather resources and work through the story by finding certain safe havens of humanity in this world that has completely been submerged, which is pretty cool.
And then a shark comes along and starts eating your raft.
Yeah, and then a shark comes along and starts eating your raft. It's very annoying. The shark is always there waiting and wanting. Then I've also been playing Stray on PS5, which is a gorgeous, gorgeous game. And quite fun just to be a cat pouring at some carpets and knocking shit off a shelf. It's pretty cool so far. I just got up to the part where the story really, really kicks in. So I've got to continue playing it, which is great.
Yeah. Luke, tell us about the games you're playing.
I've also played Stray. I finished that the other day. I beat it in like 5 hours. It's not a very long game. I'm not enamored with it like everyone else. I have some big problems with it, but it's still good. I've been playing FIFA 23 on PS5. I'm not allowed to show anything of that because it's a in progress build, but it looks incredible. I started playing some of the Hot Wheels DLC for Forza Horizon 5 because that came out this week. I also finished off Moss Book 2, which came out this week on Quest. It was on PSVR earlier in the year, so that's the next chapter of the story of Quill, the mouse that you sort of watch over. I love that series. I think it's very well done. I also finished off As Dusk Falls, which is the interactive story game thing.
I can't wait to get stuck into that. That's exactly my jam.
Yeah, I have issues with that as well. But the thing that looks cool is if you remember the movie A Scanner Darkly with mm-hmm. Keanu Reeves.
The rotoscope stuff? Yeah, it looks...
Yeah. It's essentially that, but it's all still frames,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't quite work for me because they try to do it as a motion comic, but there's just not enough motion for it to work.
Okay.
So, but don't get me wrong, like the story and the characters are interesting and the choices you make, because when you finish off a chapter, they show like the, you know, you start here, it's like a big flow chart, like Detroit Become Human did. So you can see this massive, you know, flow chart where all these different options and choices could have impacted things. But yeah, so that's all I've been playing. I've been playing a lot, looking at that list.
On the other side of things, I've just been playing Xenoblade Chronicles 3. That's it. It's a long, long game. I'm not allowed to talk about how long it is, but I do not think anybody who liked Xenoblade Chronicles 1 and 2 will be disappointed by the length of Xenoblade Chronicles 3. It's a really, really good game. It's a dark game. This is a lot darker compared to Xenoblade Chronicles 1 and 2, but it's just absolutely filled with charm and heart, and they've done a really, really good job writing characters that don't feel like caricatures, which I think is part of the problem with the previous two Xenoblade games. So yeah, they did it's a huge step up for the series. That's sort of a new baseline of where the series should go in the future, because like it really is just absolutely fantastic. And there'll be a review up on the website probably, you know, by the time this episode goes up. So read the review. It's very long. I've started writing that already, and it's going to be a long one.
It's a chronicle. Reading the review is also a chronicle.
Yeah, it's actually the Xenoblade Chronicles 3 Xenoblade Chronicle. anyway, I've also, yesterday, I played through the entirety of Escape Academy on Xbox, because that was added to Game Pass recently.
Another game I want to play.
Yeah, so it's really good. I played through split-screen co-op with my sister, and it's definitely a game that's made for co-op. I'm sure you can play it solo player, but I think the best experience is co-op. So it, like all of the platforms that it's on have like split screen. You can also do online multiplayer. And with the online, you can choose whether to have split screen, so you have to actually communicate with each other, or and like rather than you can just like see the other screen, or if not having split screen, you have to communicate with each other. But yeah, it's basically just like a whole bunch of escape rooms, all themed around certain things. And it's really, really good. The voice acting is good. The story is, like, you know, a little bit basic, but it's interesting. It's a good framing device for some really fantastic escape rooms. So if you're interested in kind of, like, digital escape rooms and puzzle games like that, definitely check it out, especially if you've got Xbox Game Pass, because it's there and you don't have to pay extra for it. And there's also a bunch of extra content coming for it as well. So they've got, like, two big waves of paid DLC and another wave of free DLC as well coming, so... yeah, really, really good shit. Moving on though, it's 20 questions time. So Angelo is leading the
Let's do it. Right, I don't know if actually my fingers cracking came through the mic room.
It definitely did. I'll clear that out. It makes you sound very tough.
Yeah,
for sure. Edited it out in the final edit, so it makes it look like an idiot.
No, or insert some random weird sound effect instead.
Just like a bone crunching sound effect that is just like completely grotesque. So was this a suggestion that you've had from somebody else or something that you've picked up on, Angelo?
This is going way back from Old Faithful, Dazza, in the Vooks Discord. A suggestion that he sent me, like, when did he send it to me? Something like May or April last year. So,
wow.
Pulling this one out.
The last week when Michael forgot who sent him the request, it was JDPcart18 on Jamie. So thanks for that one, because it was a good suggestion that we really struggled with.
Yeah, we got literally on a random guess.
All right, Luke, do you want to start us off with the standard question?
Let's do it.
A standard question being, is this a Nintendo related game? No. Okay. Was this game released before January 1st, 2000?
No.
Okay.
Was this game released after January 1st, 2010?
No.
After. So it's between 2000 and 2010, right?
That's right.
Was this released on a handheld console? Sorry.
I was just about to ask the exact same thing, so that's all good.
I was like, let's get the three ones we always ask out of the way.
It was released on a handheld console.
Okay.
So that's GBA, DS, probably not 3DS, unless there was some time travel involved.
I haven't done a random guess in a long time, so I'm just going to throw it out. I think it's Conker's Pocket Tales, just because I'm thinking, why not?
So we should probably, like, it. There's two consoles it could be on, so we can just like narrow that down right now. So was this game on the Game Boy Advance?
It was on the Game Boy Advance.
Okay.
It's only about 45,000 games. That's okay.
I mean, was this game published by Nintendo?
No, it wasn't.
Okay.
So that's about 5,000 games gone from the 45,000.
Was this an RPG of some kind?
No, it wasn't. Okay.
Is this game in a series?
Don't think so.
Cool. Okay. Standalone game?
Was this a licensed game?
I'm going to say no.
Okay. It's probably not Ants Extreme Racing. Because, yes, there was an Ants Racing game on the GVA.
But it was extreme? Yeah. What were they doing?
I don't know. I think it was also on, like, Xbox and PlayStation as well. I don't know.
Wow.
It was a weird era.
I mean, there were Tony Hawk games on the Game Boy Advance, but they were actually pretty decent for the hardware.
Was this game a platformer?
I don't believe so.
I mean, I'm thinking Boktai. Boktai? Yeah, the one from Kojima where you had to, like, sit out in the sun.
In the sun, yeah.
But I don't know if you would class that as a role-playing game or more of an adventure game.
I don't think I've ever even heard of it.
Yeah, so, I haven't.
The cartridge had a little sensor on it. You had to actually get sunlight for it to power up.
I remember
seeing
something about that ages ago. All right, so it's not a platformer. It's not an RPG. It's only one game in the series.
I'm thinking it could be a puzzler, but I don't think there were many puzzlers that start or like were on the GBA and never anything else.
Would you classify this as an action game?
I wouldn't know. That's 10 down.
Oh, man.
And the good thing with it not being licensed is all that THQ, SpongeBob SquarePants, Disney stuff.
Garbaggio, yeah.
I'll have you know that Jimmy Neutron was a fantastic GBA game.
Okay.
Dude, I love the Jimmy Neutron film back in the day.
Only. All right. Was this game developed in Japan?
No.
So it's unlikely Konami, Capcom, Square.
It's a game. Sigma Star
Isn't
something.
It's one of those GBA video cards, is it? That'll be super evil.
There was Sigma Star Saga, which is like a weird shoot 'em up, but also like kind of, I don't know. It was made by WayForward.
I will say that we're 11 questions in, and I think the only thing you know so far is that it's a GBA game.
Yeah, but we know what it's not, which is just as valuable.
Sure.
Is it a shooter?
No, it's not a shooter.
Yeah, so it's probably not. Probably not Sigma Star Saga. Man, I really don't know.
Oh my god. Maybe it is a puzzle game.
Just the only puzzles I can think of, I keep going, oh yeah, oh no, that was DS.
I mean, you could ask if it's a puzzle game.
Hmm.
Is this game a puzzle game?
Yes, it is a puzzle game.
Ah, there we go.
Okay.
Puzzle games.
Angelo was secretly laughing when I'm like, I think it's a puzzle game. And then I didn't ask anything. He's just like chuckling internally.
I was actually chuckling internally.
So many of them are Japanese as well. That's really interesting.
Spectrobes, did that release on GBA or was that DS?
That was DS, sure.
Yeah, because I know there's a Wii one, but I don't know if there was a GBA version. Unfortunately, I don't have like a giant pile of GBA games behind me to start looking through for inspiration.
Think about Kurikurikuririn, whatever it's called, but that's obviously Japanese.
Kurikurikuririn.
That was also published by Nintendo, so.
There you go.
I played that on emulators back in the day.
Were there any puzzle spin-offs on the GBA from like Tomb Raider or anything like that?
Maybe.
So I will say we haven't got region, which is usually a pretty good help for you guys when you're trying to figure out like a developer and things like that. We don't have a publisher yet.
In terms of region, was this game developed in North America?
No.
All right.
Somewhere in Europe.
It's unlikely to be Australia, but there was a lot of GBA stuff. Done by Tantalus and Taurus and things like that back in the day. Chrome did a few GBA things as well, but I don't think they did any puzzlers.
It's really weird because, yeah, I don't really know of very many puzzle games that weren't
made all the ones Japan. I'm thinking of are made in Japan.
The fact that it's not in a series, so it's like one... It's a single release puzzle game, which means it can't have been well-received because puzzle games are like the easiest game to make more of.
I mean, it might have been well-received, though.
But a well-received game that didn't get a sequel? I mean, we could ask if the developer is still in business. That might help us.
Yeah. Yeah, go for it.
All right. What is the developer of this game still in business today?
Yes, the devs are still around.
All right, that didn't actually help me.
Four more and a guess.
It wasn't published by Nintendo, developed in Europe.
I'm thinking it has to be published by THQ. They were like the biggest Europe, you know, publisher that did games out of Europe, but I can't think of...
I mean, you could ask that. I just don't know of any puzzle games. I don't think I've really played puzzle games.
I mean, I've got gripped in like games as a developer because they're based out of the UK and they're definitely still around now. I honestly can't think of anything. I mean, we're just assuming it's the UK too. It could be somewhere else. It could be one game developer.
Very well could be.
We've still got three questions left and that might help you out. And region could be a good one.
Was this game developed in Europe?
Yes.
Okay. So it's not Australian or Botswanan.
There's some random Botswana game developer who made one GBA game. He's like, God damn it. I just can't think of any puzzle games on the GBA outside of like Tetris and Donkey Kong Banana Swing or Swing King of Swing, whatever it was called.
What was that? Oh God. There was like a Tetris ripoff clone Majiga that was developed by like Rare back in the day.
Sableworth.
No, not that.
No, there's a puzzle game from Rare, though.
Oh, my God.
On the GBA, it was published by THQ. Because Rare, all the GBA stuff from Rare was THQ published.
It was like,
I've literally not seen or played this game in, probably since I read about it in a magazine, like, when it came out. Like, it's been that long.
It's like Mr. Pants? It's Mr. Pants?
Maybe? That's...
I thought Mr. Pants, but I'm like, that can't be the name of it.
I think so. It was like Mr. Pants or It's Mr. Pants or something.
I'm pretty sure it's one of those ones where it's got a full, you know, subtitle like Mr. Pants and the quest for the linen press or something like that.
Oh my God. Like Zack and Wiki and the quest for Barbados treasure.
Barbarous treasure or something.
Yeah. Oh, Solstice and the quest for the Staff of Demnos.
All right.
I was going to do it. Was this game developed by Rare?
Developed by Rare?
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Oh, okay, so it has to be this game then.
It has to be.
I'm just
Mr.
not
Pants
confident
game.
On what the hell it's called at all.
It's not Mr. Pants. It's Pantsworth something or other. God.
So we're just saying Pantsworth?
Yeah, it's something like that.
No, I'm pretty sure it's Mr. Pants. I'm willing to like take the L on this if I'm the one who's wrong about it, but I'm like 70% confident it's Mr. Pants.
Because all the questions I can ask about it aren't gonna like get us closer to the name. We only have one question to guess, right?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
I'm glad to see that in my absence things haven't changed.
No, it has to be Mr. Pants. We keep saying it's Mr. Pants as in it's called Mr. Pants. The game's called It's Mr. Pants.
Oh right, I was like, what the hell are you talking about?
Okay. I mean, like, it's the only guess we have. Unless like there's a secret Rare puzzle game that we've never heard of.
The only Game Boy games from Rare that I know of, apart from the Donkey Kong Country ports, which were Nintendo done, Banjo-Kazooie, Grunty's Revenge, Sableworth or Beowulf, whatever the hell it was called, and then It's Mr. Pants.
Okay, so if we have all these options, do we have a question that can narrow it down?
Did we confirm if it was Rare? We did, didn't
yes,
we?
Yes, it was developed by Rare.
Yep.
Is that Sableworth game a Tetris-like game?
No, I believe it's like a side-scrolling platformer. Like that's its primary thing. Is you see that and you think more platformer.
So it wouldn't fit into the puzzle genre anyway.
I wouldn't classify it as a puzzler. No.
All right. I'm just going to ask if the game has pants in the title.
Is that allowed? I feel like that's cheating.
Is that your question?
Yeah. Does this game have pants in the title?
It does have pants in the title.
Oh my god. Okay. I legit thought you were going to say no. And then I was like, well, game over, I guess.
Hang on, let's make sure there's no other game.
Is it Mr. Pants?
I believe it's just called It's Mr. Pants.
It's Mr. Pants is full title.
Yeah.
I think so.
Are we going to get penalized if we just say Mr. Pants?
I mean, I wouldn't be that pedantic, but Angelo hasn't been around for a while, so maybe he's been feeling a little vindictive.
Yeah, I have forgotten the rules, so. So you guess?
We'll go with It's Mr. Pants here, right? Sure. Like, all right. Is this game It's Mr. Pants?
Okay, that's the 20th question. Whoops, hit my headphones. Okay, so developed by Rare, published by THQ, and another publisher called Infuso. Reason being, the Game Boy Advance version released in America in November 2004 and in Europe in February of 2005, but a mobile version was also developed. So Infuso was a mobile publisher.
You mean like an iOS, like a current gen, or like an old school, like it ran on your Nokia mobile version?
Well, this was prior to the iPhone because it released on mobile in May 2005 and March 2006 in Europe and North America, respectively.
So it was Nokia Engage, baby.
Java-based game, yeah.
Yeah, so wow. Game Boy version and a mobile version. It is It's Mr. Pants.
Wow. Can you confirm that if we'd just said Mr. Pants, would you have given it to us?
Nah, I absolutely would have given it. That's
part of it. Nah, f*** you guys.
No, I absolutely would give that to you. That's basically
to be fair, I think we would have got the right name anyway, because we would have gone, is this It's Mr. Pants?
I have no idea how you remembered It's Mr. Pants. Yeah,
the whole time, I'm like, these guys aren't going to get it. They're not going to get this one. I've finally chosen a hard game, so you guys aren't going to win around with me. And then you end up bloody getting it.
I legit, like, all I can remember that it was a game. And, like, I remember reading about it in magazines, like, back in the day. And I don't think I've even ever played it, like, even in an emulator. Like, I just remember the game existed. I never in a million years have picked the name, ever.
It's got a weird, like, stick person kind of art style. I never played this game. I don't even think I even heard of it before Darren's suggestion a year and a half ago. But I was just looking back in the backlog, and I'm like, yeah, let's go with this. Because I looked at the results that we've been collecting in the spreadsheet. And, you know, my ones are significantly higher for successes. So I'm like, okay, I've got to pick a hard one because I think might have just been too easy.
I was thinking of Henry Hatsworth.
Oh, right.
Henry Hatsworth.
That's what I was thinking of initially.
No, also, I sort of like... Yeah, go on,
Ollie. No, you...
I was just going to say, I sort of like vaguely remembered Mr. Pants from like one of those like, you know, top 10 hidden gems on the GBA style like articles.
So. Well, on the cover, on the title, like Mr. Pants is in its own red box, and It's is in a little red box above it. So your eye catches
kind of like
Pants
how,
more than It's.
Kind of like how Animal Crossing is actually called Welcome to Animal Crossing.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Also, Luke, you said Saberwolf before. Like, isn't Saberwolf like one of the characters from, what's that fighting game? Yeah.
I honestly couldn't tell you. I just remember there's a
it definitely
DBA
is. I don't know.
Puzzle, a DBA game with a character.
Okay, because you said Saberwolf, and I'm like, isn't that a character from Killer Instinct?
Yeah. Saberwolf, GBA. Let's Google it. Oh, there is Saberwolf. Saber, okay. It's spelled correctly, space W-U-L-F.
Okay.
There you go.
Fair enough.
Someone has a long play of it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, 40
5
minutes.
5 hours long.
Jesus. For a Game Boy Advance game. Wow.
Well, thank you very much to Darren for that suggestion 18 months ago. It threw them for a loop this time.
I actually might check the game out. Looks cool.
So yeah, 20 questions. Finally. So I am the question master this time. I have a game. This isn't suggested by a person. This is one that I've picked because the one that was suggested by a person is like it's a difficult one, and I worry with Angela not being here that it's just not going to happen. So I picked another one. I think somebody mentioned it to me a while back, and I thought it would be a fun one to do. So yeah. Ask away.
Okay. Well, I guess we'll start off the same way we start off every time, Pinky. was this game released after 2010?
Was it released after 2010? So was it like released like January 1st, 2011 or later?
Okay, was it released 2010 and after? God damn it.
It was released 2010 or after, yes.
Okay.
Narf. Sorry, it was after 2010, correct?
It was 2010 and after.
Yeah. Okay. Was this game released on a cartridge?
It was not released on a cartridge, no.
So disc-based systems.
Or digital exclusive.
Or digital, yeah. I guess let's clear that up. Was this game released on a disc?
This game was released on a disc, yes.
Okay. So Wii U. Do you want to? Shall we clarify if it's Wii or Wii U?
Yeah, we need to.
One of those libraries is much smaller than the other.
I could ask if it was released on a platform that had Wii in the name, but that wouldn't help. Was this game released on a platform that had U in the title?
It was not. No.
Okay. So
Wii. Jesus. Okay. Oh man, this is Wii ones are always so hard. There's just so many Wii games.
Yep. I think we should try and see if we can get a developer or a publisher.
Should we do the publisher in Japan? That is always an easier one.
Yeah.
Was this game published in Japan?
Do you mean like by a Japanese publisher?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
Okay.
I don't like how he clarified that question.
No, I worded it poorly. That's totally fair.
I'm just like reading into it. It's like it's published in Japan by a Japanese company, but published in Europe by a European company.
What I'm no, reading I just into I it. Just wanted clarification because like
I mean know, it could be both, just but at least
released in Japan. But yeah,
yeah.
All right, we'll just assume published by a Japanese company. So Square Enix, Capcom, all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
All right. Did this game use bizarre motion controls?
I would argue that all motion controls are bizarre, but it used motion controls, if that helps.
Okay, I feel like we sort of wasted a question there, because I feel like the majority of Wii games use motion controls.
No, that's why I said bizarre, because there are some games that just did very minimal motion control towards the end of the console. Fair. Whereas in the early days, it's like, oh, you know, you have to do 17 rotations of the Wii remote to unlock a door here, you know.
Yeah, I'm going to give you that one as a free question. Like, I'm not going to count that as a used question because like it does use like motion controls, but like I don't know if it would be considered.
You don't know the extent of the controls, okay?
Oh, I know the extent of the controls. I just don't know if they would be considered bizarre.
Okay. I mean, was this game developed by Nintendo?
It was not developed by Nintendo.
We could probably ask if it was in a series because there's been a few one-offs on the Wii.
Yeah, that's fair.
Is this game part of a series?
It is part of a series, yes.
Okay.
My mind's gone to Okami for the Wii.
I guess technically it is a series, yeah.
Well, no, because it was a DS game.
Yeah, yeah.
So Okami was like PS3, Wii, you know, Switch and all that's been ported across, but there was actually a DS entry as well, so.
Yeah.
Because that also used motion controls.
Should we try a genre?
Yeah.
What would you consider Okami? What, an action game? Platform game?
I'd call it like an action role-playing game.
Yeah, or an action game. Is this an action game?
It's not what you would consider an action game, no.
Okay.
I am stumped now, trying to think of what it might be.
How many questions do we have?
You've had 8 so far, so you've got...
Okay.
You know,
what's this game published by Nintendo?
This game was published by Nintendo.
Here we go. Okay. Not developed by, but published by Nintendo. That's definitely narrowing down some games.
What's that Fire Emblem game on Wii? It's not Radiance of Dawn. That was GameCube.
Path of Radiance? No. No. No, Radiant Dawn. Wait. It's Radiant something, right? Even on Wii? I'm pretty sure.
The old probably. GameCube to Wii issue.
Look, I have it on my shelf behind me. Give me 1 second. Is Path of Radiance on GameCube, so it must be Radiant Dawn on Wii. I'm pretty sure Radiant Dawn is one of them, right?
Yeah, it's Radiant Dawn.
Yeah.
I just remember Path of Radiance, and I'm like, it just sort of stuck in my head. So it could be one of those, because the Fire Emblem series is still going. It could be Paper Mario, Super Paper Mario on the Wii.
Mm-hmm.
They were both developed outside of Nintendo, published by Nintendo. We could ask if it's an ongoing series.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Is this game part of an ongoing series?
It is part of an ongoing series.
Okay. That didn't narrow it down from Fire Emblem or Paper Mario.
I guess we can ask if it's an RPG.
Yeah. Well, hang on.
It's a tactical. Oh, you know what?
Oh yeah, yeah. Sorry, I was thinking Fire Emblem was an RPG, but it's not. It's a tactical turn-based game.
Yeah,
it's a tactical RPG.
Yeah, I would say it's a tactical RPG.
Yeah, I mean, if you're saying just a straight RPG, I wouldn't think Fire Emblem over Paper Mario.
But then you have to ask: was Super Paper Mario an RPG?
Or was it just a platformer RPG?
We could always just ask if it has well-known Nintendo characters in the game. Because it could also be neither of those. It could be something else entirely. Like Excite Truck or something.
Oh my god. But like this is the trap that I think I got you guys landed in on one of them. You guys asked if it had Nintendo characters in it. And it technically did. This is with DOA. It had a Nintendo character in it. And then like that really leads you down the wrong path. Oh man.
All right, so I can ask that in a good way. Does this game feature well-known Nintendo characters on the box art?
It does feature well-known Nintendo characters on the box art.
Okay. If that also screws us for some reason, that would be hilarious.
Because that down knocks out like Excite Truck and Excite Bots, which we had Excite. I think we had Excite Bots, because that's part of the Excite series, which is technically still alive.
It could be Metroid 3.
It could be, yeah. Or Metroid Other M.
The game that shall not be named.
Actually, I'm pretty sure we've had that game anyway.
We might have. I don't recall. All right, I was going to ask. I just don't want to be screwed by the tactical RPG. Okay, would this game be considered to be an RPG?
It is not an RPG.
Okay, cool. So I would knock out Paper Mario and Fire Emblem out of those. How many questions do we have left?
You have 7 more and a guess.
7 more and a guess.
Because okay. We know it's an action game. Hang on, did we say it was an action game? We said no, it wasn't.
It's not an action game.
Okay. No, it's not an action game.
So technically it could be one of the sports ones then?
Could be a sports one. It still could be Metroid. Like it's technically a first-person shooter.
Yeah, I mean it uses motion, same as the sports ones. All right. I mean, is this game considered a sports title?
No, I would not consider it a sports title.
Cool. So there goes golf and
strikers,
tennis and all that.
Sports mix, sluggers. It isn't something dumb like Wii Sports Resort or like Brain Academy.
Well, it had well-known sports game
Nintendo characters on the box.
Yeah, Mii's are well-known Nintendo characters.
Mii's don't have enough personality to be considered a character.
Oh man.
I mean, it could be Mario. No, because we know it wasn't developed by Nintendo. It was published by them. I was gonna say it could be Mario Kart Wii, but that was definitely developed in-house at Nintendo. So.
Oh, it could be Wario Land, Shake Dimension.
Yeah, could be.
Which is just straight platformer. Or straight platformer, quote unquote.
I mean, we could ask if it's a first person shooter or takes place from the first person perspective. That would either confirm Metroid or knock it out.
Got a feeling it's probably not Metroid. Oh god. I don't know. I guess we can ask if it's first-person shooter, or we can ask if it's a platformer.
Yeah.
Or both.
does this game take place from the first-person point of view?
It does not.
Okay. Is this game a platformer?
It is a platformer.
Okay. So it could be Wario Land. It could be Super Mario Galaxy, quite frankly. We haven't knocked out that.
Yeah, but that was developed by Nintendo.
Oh, wait, it came out in 2010 or after, right?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I don't think Wario Land came out that late.
No, Wario Land Shake Dimension was a bit earlier than that.
Oh, man, now I'm really screwed.
So we know it's not a sports game. We know it's not a first person anything. And we know it is a platform. Hang on, you said it is a platformer, right?
It is a platformer, yeah.
Okay.
When did our Mario Galaxy 2 come out?
That was 2011.
But again, published by development Nintendo.
Oh, damn it, development Nintendo. Yeah, okay, shut up.
Kirby's Epic Yarn. That was late Wii. That's a platformer, not made by Nintendo. It's developed by HAL.
That's right up Ollie's wheelhouse.
Yeah. Only one that jumps to my mind right now.
You said we've had other M, right?
I said I thought we did. I couldn't see it on the list of games that we've had.
Okay, yeah, I guess Kirby's Epic Yarn. I can't think of anything else. Like, there was another Epic Kirby game, the remake, right? That came out after that late? The remake of Dreamland?
Well, after Epic Yarn on Wii was Extra Epic Yarn on the 3DS, and then Wii U got Kirby and the Rainbow Curse, which is that, you know,
I'm
drawing.
I'm pretty sure Return to Dreamland came out later. Okay, I guess we can. So, how many questions do we have left?
You have 4 more, I guess.
Okay. Does this game contain Kirby as the main character?
This game does contain Kirby as the main character.
Okay. So it's either Epic Yarn or that other one.
I'll be honest, I can't think of what the other one. I don't have any recollection
sure
of the other one.
Return to Dreamland. I'm pretty sure it's a remake of the first game? The Game Boy game? I can't remember. The first game, I think.
No, I don't doubt you. I literally just have no recollection of that remake ever existing. Does this game use a knitted art style?
Is that what you're asking, or is that what you're suggesting?
Yes. No, that's what I'm asking.
This game does have a knitted art style.
Okay. Has to be that, then.
I was just saying, we confirmed it was Kirby, because then there was Yoshi's Woolly World, but that was on Wii.
Yeah, as the main character.
Yeah.
That's exactly why I said it, because I was like, there's plenty of games that contain Kirby in some type of ancillary fashion, so not fall into this trap.
It can't be anything else, and then...
It can't be. Shall we guess it?
Go for it.
Okay, is this game Kirby's Epic Yarn?
Alrighty, so released in April 2010 in Japan and North America, and in August 2010 in Australia and Europe, co-developed by HAL Laboratory and Goodfeel, it is Kirby's Epic Yarn.
Oh, God, thought for a second it wasn't going to be that, a small panic.
No, it's definitely Kirby's Epic Yarn. Yeah, so this is my favorite game of all time. I've spoken about it a lot in the past. But yeah, it has you, going through a crafted world.
I need to look up Kirby's Dreamland so I can see if I'm
yeah, so there is another one. It's Kirby's Return to Dreamland.
Is it a remake or no?
It's kind of a remake. It's like a reimagining of like Kirby Superstar, right?
Right. Okay, that's what I'm thinking of.
But. Yeah, it's like a remake, kind of like a, a reboot, kind of like a reimagining.
Cool.
It's all of the Rees. But yeah, Kirby's Epic Yarn. That about wraps up this week's Vookcast. Be sure to visit the site, www.vooks.net, for all your Nintendo news, reviews, and everything in between. To keep up to date, follow the site on Twitter and everything else at vooks.net, which is all spelled out, or jump on over to our Discord at bit.ly/vooksdiscord. You can find all the host's social information and links for all of the stories covered in this episode in the episode notes on whatever platform you're listening to. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next fortnight.